Thank you. Good evening, and welcome to the January 14th regular meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education. It's always nice to see a big audience here, even though I know some of you won't be here too long, but thanks for coming. We appreciate it. Okay. Ms. Dawson, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers will not be present tonight, so could you make a note just so when we're voting on things, if I neglect to mention our votes that way? Okay. So the board met in closed session, and we'll get to that in just a moment after I see if we have a consensus on the order of business for this evening. Everyone good? Okay, yep. Great, thanks. All right, we met in closed session to discuss action and to hear three stipulated student discipline matters, and we will now take action. The first, I would like to have a motion, please, with regard to our stipulated expulsion number one.
I move the recommendation on student number one.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So that's unanimous. And then we have, we need to take a vote on student discipline with regard to student number two.
I'll move the recommendation for student two.
I'll second.
Okay, motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And on student three. Okay, we have a motion by Ms. Frame, a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so just so you know, we're going to be passing some papers up and down a little bit that we're required to sign after this action was taken, so we're still paying close attention to what's going on. So next is item 4.06, approval of the minutes from December 12, 2019. Any discussion with regard to those, changes, corrections, amendments? If there are none, then I would like a motion, please.
I'll move approval of the minutes of, don't tell me, December 13th, 2019.
Or December 12th.
Did it on the 13th. Okay. The 12th. Thank you. Okay. December 12th.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That was a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by me.
Do I need to abstain?
No, you can vote on minutes if you read them. Okay, and then the minutes from December 17th.
I move approval of the minutes of December 17th.
I'll second. We have a motion by Ms. Frame, a second by me. Any discussion? Didn't ask. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So that was a motion by Ms. Frame, a second by me. Okay, next. 4.08 has to do with the ratification of board reorganization actions. Dr. Prater.
And Ms. President, during the December 17th, 2019 reorganization meeting, Mrs. Roger was not in attendance. However, the board appointed or at least nominated her for three specific roles. And tonight is our way of bringing it back for Mrs. Rogers' nod of approval. And those three items or three assignments are the 2020 board clerk assignment, the 2020 equity team committee assignment, and the SEIU liaison assignment. And the request on this item is for Mrs. Roger to affirm that this is something she can take on.
Okay. Well, firstly, I would like to thank my colleagues for their understanding and forbearance for my missed meetings over the last couple of months. My father was very ill and did pass the day after Thanksgiving, and then I became ill. So I appreciate everyone's kindness and consideration, and I am willing to undertake those duties that were so generously assigned to me in the coming year. Thank you.
Thank you. Now you know what happens if you're not here at a meeting, everybody. Hey, thank you. That's right. So next is our student representatives. Hello, thanks for coming. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jenna. I'm the vice president at Morro Bay High. So we just got back from our winter break, and right as we got back, our new office building was like officially open, and it's so nice. And we've already been having meetings in there. Like today we had our scholarship meeting with all the seniors, and it held like all of us very nicely. Ooh. And there's cool rolly chairs. We did have our 100 and 200 halls closed down, and they already like are demolishing stuff and doing that, and our teachers have been relocated. It's a really nice layout, actually. We all thought it was going to be kind of weird, but it makes walking to class a little bit shorter sometimes because they're all right next to each other. That's basically it, actually, for my part. Now, Riley.
Hi, I'm Riley, the ASB president at Morro Bay High, and what I'm going to talk about is the last thing that we did at our school was the winter dance, and our winter dance is a sock hop, or was a sock hop this year for the first time. And if you don't know what that is, it's like a 50s dance, but I'm pretty sure everybody knows what that is. And it was like a really like good success. We were kind of worried about it because usually the winter dance is like our like smallest turnout because it's right after winter break and not a lot of people like know about it. But we did a spirit week up to it where we like counted down, like Monday was, Tuesday was 80s, and then it went 70s, 60s, Friday was 50s, and the dance was on Saturday. So that we just got done with, and now we're already planning our next dance, which is the biggest of the year, the neon dance. And we just picked our theme. We decided to do neon Wonderland, like an Alice in Wonderland kind of a thing. And that's all for ASB updates. But today, Jenna and I, after this meeting, are going to the basketball game because we have a rival basketball game today. So that's fun.
Ooh, good, good. Well,
thank you.
Go team. How's that? So, as always, thank you so much for coming, and get yourselves off to that game. So, thank you. Thanks very much. That's right. All right. I see Mr. Mayfield approaching for our Baywood highlights. Thank
yes, you. Since we're on the coast, we'll have one of our wonderful coastal elementary schools do the program highlights, and we have Mrs. Stevens and some great Baywood students. Mrs. Stevens.
All right. Okay, thanks so much for having us tonight. I am so grateful to be here and to share some of the wonderful things that we're doing at Baywood this year. First, as always, I just want to thank the board so much for all of your support for all of our school sites, and especially our school this year with the transitions that we're making for this next school year, and just really appreciate all of your support and welcome you to come out anytime to visit us. But today, I have some super exceptional Baywood Bears with me today. When we started the school year and we were making our school plan, I met with Ms. Chavez, our counselor, and we were looking at that culture of care and how do we look at that through the lens of equity and opening doors for students and have that be a part of our campus on a regular basis. So we know that teachers have so much on their plates, so we decided to put it on our students to help us with some wonderful events that they're doing during our lunchtime to bring students together and open doors for students. So I have our wonderful Character Counts leadership team here today, along with our Peace Patrol, and they're going to be sharing some of the great things that they've been doing with our students at lunchtime to bring our community together. What I think is so awesome about these students is that I went to their December meeting and said, hey, I have this board meeting that's in January. I just need a couple of you to come and talk about what you're doing, and I have 10 of them here tonight, which is about 90% of our leadership team that all said, I'll give up my lunch. lunch, and I'll come hang out with you on Tuesday night to be a part of this. So I'm so grateful for their time and their families for coming tonight to share some of the highlights of what we've done so far this year. So we'll start with Elof. Come on over, Elof.
My name is Elof, and I am in fifth grade. Our character counts leadership team is made of third through fifth grade students. We present our monthly bear hug assembly each month. We honor students that are following our character counts qualities, such as responsibility. Responsibility and caring. For example, at our last bear hug assembly, I shared that responsibility means to me it was following directions, being truthful, and being nice to people. Yeah.
My name is Sarah, and I am in fifth grade. On the playground or in class, students can also earn kachas. Our pillars of character are also on our kachas and remind us of the positive choices we are making. We also plan our monthly spirit days once a month. We make posters to let the students know of our upcoming spirit day. Some of our spirit days have been PJ Day, Beach Day, and this month is Backwards Day.
My name is Evelyn, and I'm in third grade, and all I like is Spirit Day, and Crazy Hair Day, and Pajama Day, and Miss Davis had pink hair and Crazy Hair Day.
I think there's a picture of Mrs. Capilano and I at the bottom.
Hi, my name is Kailani. I'm in fifth grade. During lunch recess, fourth and fifth grade students can also be a part of our Peace Patrol. Starting this month, students are trained by Ms. Chavez to figure out problems and solutions on the playground. We use restorative questions such as asking students how their actions affect others and what they can do to make it right with the other person. It's fun to hang out with little kids and help students stay safe and have fun at recess.
My name is Amar, and I am in fifth grade. Our library is also open for students to play board games and do art activities at lunchtime. I love that we have a supportive librarian. It's also a nice alternative for people who do not love to go outside. It is also fun to meet new people by playing games. I love to go and talk to Miss Nelson about my day, especially if I'm having a hard one. Once a week, one of our parents also comes in to do yoga. My favorite part of yoga is because it is fun and a different experience than just playing on the playground.
My name is Destiny, and I'm in third grade. In September, we helped our school participate in a program called Start with Hello Week. This nationwide event is based in Sandy Hook and was created to honor all victims of gun violence by turning this event into a moment of change and friendship. Through the week's activities, we wanted students to reach out and include those who might be feeling alone and to help make more friends at Baywood. I liked sending notes to my friends to make them smile and feel happy.
My name is Jasmine, and I am in second grade. Each day we have some fun lunchtime activities that we help with. For example, Mondays, no one eats alone, where students ate with different groups of friends. On Tuesday, everyone in school wore a name tag, and school try to see how many friends you can say hello to in one day. We also had an all-skim family. One day we also had
had an all-school family picnic together. My favorite part was the picnic because you get to eat with your family and friends.
My name is Violet, and I'm in third grade. Each day, we also have tables outside where students could write positive notes to friends. After lunch, we delivered the notes to students in their classrooms. It was fun to see the positive message, table filled with students writing happy notes to friends each day at lunch.
My name is Courtney, and I am in third grade. In December, our school also did a week called Be Unique. This week, we learned about what makes each of us ourselves or unique. In our classrooms, we read a book called Just Ask by Yesenia Sotomayor. It talks about different students with special needs and connections that we can make from everyone's uniqueness. My favorite part was learning about a student that uses a wheelchair, and even though he can't walk, he can still go super fast. We also had activities each day for students to do. For example, we wore different colors during the week to show our uniqueness, like yellow for friendship on Tuesday, blue for unity on Friday.
My name is Kira, and I am in third grade. At lunch, we also had fun activities. We decorated a handprint that made this beautiful flower on the display in our office, in our school office right now. Mm-hmm. We also made a diversity chain where each of us decorated one chain to add to our school-wide chain. We also did a trust walk at lunch. It was interesting to think how it might be to live with a visual impairment as our partners were leading us through the obstacle course as we were blindfolded.
In the evening that week, our parents also got to learn about diversity and how to talk to your child about differences with a parent class. My mom, Sandra Saruf, and Shannon Messerly led a great workshop for our parents about strategies that they can use at home to help their child to talk about differences. The parents all walked away with talking points that they could use at home. We look forward to practicing in more fun weeks like this to bring our school together and celebrate our Baywood community.
All thanks to you, of you, and all the people who are helping our school and helping the kids and making Baywood a great place to learn by.
Mrs. Stevens?
Yes.
On behalf of the board, I'd just like to present you with a certificate and your incredible leadership students, a certificate of appreciation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Right.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Thanks. You guys did an awesome job. Thanks so much for taking time out of your evening to come be with us tonight. We very much appreciate it. Okay, our next item is correspondence, and the board received an email from Katie Hoem and a letter from Jennifer Bauer in correspondence this past week, and both of those are made part of the record. Our next item is public comment. Please be aware that that Anyone wishing to make to address the board during public comment will have 3 minutes to do so. Ms. Dawson will be the keeper of the timer. You will need to conclude at the time when your 3 minutes are up. If you wish to speak this evening, we always appreciate it if you're able to fill out a yellow card. They're on the back table there, and if you bring it to Ms. Dawson, then she'll get it to Mrs. Roger, who will call names in the order they were received. The 3 minutes will, you may not give your time to someone else or speak more than once on each topic. At this time, public comment is generally available to those wishing to speak to us on an item not further on the agenda, or if you don't want to stay for that item to be presented, you can speak now. So it appears we have some yellow sheets.
Yes, we have actually a number of speakers tonight. So I'll just be calling you in the order received. First will be Scott Smith, Superintendent of Coast Unified, followed by Beth Meyer.
Good evening, Board, and good evening, Dr. Prater. Thank you for allowing me a few minutes to speak. I'm here tonight on behalf of the Coast Unified School District and the trustees of that district. I have provided a written copy of the comments that I'm going to make tonight. The topic that I'm speaking about this evening is the inter-district transfer memorandum of understanding for high school students, for the Cayucas High School students. Thank you for your partnership in serving the students of our three districts. Our cooperation benefits students in many ways. We offer support. We often support one another in special education, transportation, and consultation. Our partnership provides students with additional opportunities in school choice through our inter-district transfer memorandum of understanding established in January of 2018. Can't hardly believe it was 2 years ago. By establishing this MOU, we made a powerful statement embracing the concept that one size does not fit all. Rather than families only having one option, our partnership enables them to have school choice. Selecting the school of their choice benefits our students by raising their intrinsic motivation. This groundbreaking MOU confirmed our mutual commitment to putting kids first. With the sharing of superintendent services between Cayucas Elementary School District and Coast Unified School District, I have become keenly aware of the process that CUSD undertook to approve this MOU. The former superintendent and the board trustees approved the MOU not because they thought it was perfect, but because they believed the time was right to take action. They believed in this new partnership being formed by the three districts. They also believed that the three districts could be trusted to make any necessary changes at a later date. At the time of approval, all parties recognized that the MOU was not perfect. Since taking this leap of faith in our new partnership, it has become apparent that the agreed upon 125% of base amount under local control funding formula is more than what should have been negotiated. Coast Unified trustees relied on estimates of the cost and the impact on the CUSD budget, which did not accurately reflect the true impact. While Coast has every intention of living up to the agreement and values the partnership that was established, the district is concerned about protecting student programs. Coast Unified has cut almost $500,000 out of its annual budget from the 2018-19 to the 2019-20 school year. For a district as small as CUSD, this is a significant amount. The cost-cutting measures that have been taken thus far will not negatively impact student programs. At this point, the options for additional savings will have a direct negative impact on students. Therefore, we ask that the MOU be refined to make it work for everyone involved.
Thank you. Thank you. We do have a copy.
Yes.
We each have a copy, and we appreciate it. As you know, we're unable to engage with you at this time, but we appreciate your coming and speaking with us.
Thank you, and I appreciate you looking into it.
Thank you.
So then our next speaker is Beth Meyer.
Good Good evening, board members and district office staff, superintendent. My name is Beth Meyer, and I am a new teacher at San Luis High School. This is my first year teaching there. Also, and thanks to everybody here at the table, all three of my children went K-12 through San Luis Coastal, just recently graduated and are successfully starting college, so thank you for that. I bring to you the topic of course offerings at San Luis Obispo High School. I teach 9th and 10th grade college prep English, and I teach an integrated class. So a good portion of the students in my class are socioeconomically disadvantaged as well as English learners. I also take on several students that have 504s and IEPs. It's my area of expertise, so I have a large number of students. So the Lexile, as measured by SRI, of the students in my class goes from 280 to 1400, so it's quite an expanse. But to tell you the truth, the majority of the students in my class are at a Lexile of 800 or below, which is at least four grade levels below where they should be right now. And my concern is the way the course offering is at San Luis High School and the gap in their English instruction. So as I survey the schedules of my students that I currently have in my class, and again, they're below basic and basic, about 80% of them in English. Some of them had their last English course ending in March of last year, and they just started their A course with me in November, which means that they went about 8 or 9 months without rich instruction in English language. And then that would be my 10th graders. And for my 9th graders, a lot of them ended their last course at Laguna in June of 2019, and now they're just started with me at the end of November. So as we know, first best instruction and what is offered at San Luis High School with our system that's currently in place is to make sure that kids get exposed as much as possible and as often as possible to the skills that they need. Above and beyond things like summer school, which would be wonderful, but we have the ability within our trimester system to offer these students three trimesters of college prep English. And I know this is an exaggeration, but the department head said he's been trying for that for 20 years. but I come here speaking especially for the students that I serve each day. I believe that they would really benefit from being in an English course, just a regular college prep English course. Of course, with me, that would be amazing. But to make sure that they get instruction for at least 9 months of the school year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, next we have Jennifer Bauer, followed by Quinn,
Quinn Brussel.
Brussel, thank you very much. I couldn't tell if that was an L or an R at the end.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Bauer, and I'm a second grade teacher at C.L. Smith and the mother of two students who attended K through 12 in the district. In addition to being a teacher, I'm the chair of the local Sierra Club and a trained climate reality leader. I'm here with some amazing students to talk about the important issue of climate action and its impact on students. In June of 2018, my daughter Jordan and two friends introduced a climate action resolution that was passed by the board. Since then, the district has done some great things to take action. We would like, however, to ask that the board and district to further support the climate action resolution by joining schools across the country with the development of a comprehensive sustainability plan. This would provide clear goals and objectives for the integration of sustainability into student learning, district operations, and initiatives. The integration of sustainability will reduce the district's environmental footprint, support student achievement, develop the next generation of environmental stewards, and generate cost savings. Weaving climate change literacy into the curriculum will prepare students for the challenges of the 21st century and promote innovative career pathways that meet the demands of a green economy. I won't go into the long list of dismal facts about climate change. I'm sure everyone here is aware that 97% of scientists believe that climate change is a serious threat to us and future generations. We're at a crossroads, and everyone needs to do everything they can to mitigate the effects. In 2018, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said we have 12 years to make significant changes to limit rising temperatures to 1.5 Celsius to prevent irreversible changes.
The clock is ticking. I care, as we all do, deeply about children. 10 years from now, I want to face our children with a clear conscience and tell them I tried my hardest to do everything I could. Students like the ones here today are standing up and asking us to join them in taking action. And to that, I say yes. Today, we present you with a proposed sustainability plan. Part of the plan is the creation of a district green team comprised of administrators, teachers, students, parents, and community members to further develop the plan and objectives. Today, we ask you to consider this draft proposal and the positive implications for our children's futures. We ask that you put it on your agenda for consideration at a future board meeting. Thank you for your time and your service.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Quinn Russell, and it first came to my attention, the whole climate crisis, when I was in third grade. That was the first time they talked about it in school. And when you're that young, you kind of take your whole environment and world for granted. You kind of assume that everything's going to, you know, stay the same. And I remember that had a kind of a great effect on me, knowing that there was actually something that could really tear down my way of life that was looming, and that worried me. But then, for a couple of years afterwards, I kind of like put it on the back burner because it's not something you like to think about. Because from my perspective, I was a little kid, really nothing I could do about it. I just kind of had to cross my fingers and hope somebody else would do something. And as got older in high school, I was becoming more involved in politics. I'm the president of a political club on campus. And so I started facing these issues a lot more, and it became really, really clear that it was going to be hard to wait for other people to do things about this. It's, Washington is kind of at a standstill on climate. And then you had reports, like as Jennifer was saying, about basically, they're dropping the amount of time we had left to fix this every couple of years. And then I noticed within my peers that a lot of them knew about it, but they didn't want to think about it, kind of like how I was. They might believe in climate change, but they wanted to assume that somebody else was going to help with it or do something about it, or they wanted to basically, they just didn't understand the full effect. So I got involved with this group here because we knew we had to do something about climate change, or else someone has to do something, or else it's not going to get done. So we have this proposal that we're giving to you guys, and hope you guys will consider it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next I have Ashley Thorshov.
Hi.
Followed by Landis Blakesley.
Hi. Ashley Thorshov. I'm a junior at Sohi. And unlike Quinn, I'm fairly new to the climate action scene. I remember learning about it. I've always been very environmentally interested ever since I was little. I've loved nature, loved the ocean, loved animals. But I remember a few years ago, I was looking through the news, and I saw an article on the climate crisis, and I've always heard about global warming. It's one of those phrases that's been coined around ever since I was born. But climate crisis had a bit more of an edge to it, and it really intrigued me. And I remember after reading that article, after seeing the devastating effects that are going to happen to our planet, I was just shocked, and I wondered, how is no one thinking about this? This is less than 15 years away, and we have so many people stuck in oblivion, not seeming to care about my future, my brother's future, my parents' future. So since about a year ago, I've been really interested in trying to persuade people to open their eyes and try to make more of a change, try to change themselves, try to change their community. Because I know my parents may have felt a bit of panic with the nuclear war not nuclear war, but the possibility of a nuclear war when they were young. But this is, it's very strange to wake up every day and have a certain threat to your way of life. And one of the reasons that I'm here is that I would like to make sure that my peers are aware, make sure that my parents are aware that something very, very bad is happening, and we have to stand up and we have to fight against it. And it makes me so proud to be working with people like the students that are here today and Jennifer Bauer. But one of the biggest things I think we need to focus on is awareness and small changes in our community, because if every person on this planet just changed a little bit, we would be so much closer to finding a solution than we are now. So one of the reasons we're here today is to ask that you look at the sustainability plan that we submitted and consider it for an advance, consider placing it on the agenda for the next meeting, because truly all we can do is make little steps, little marches forward, and hopefully if we start here we can branch out and open our community's eyes, open the state's eyes, and just go from there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Landis. Oh, this is a lot louder than I thought it was going to be. Okay. So going off my speech a little bit, I think the exact moment when I became hyper aware of climate change was freshman year. This is when I was still in cross country, and I was for sure the slowest person on the team. But we were actually running to this top, to the top of this hill, and I think it was a really, it was a really hot season that year. And I remember looking across the scene and seeing this beautiful mountain actually ablaze. And I remember being so horrified because there was smoke everywhere, and I hadn't actually realized it because I was so concerned about myself and being scared about actually running. But I remember running home that day and just watching the smoke billow out from the trees, and it was honestly one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen, and I think it'll stick with me for the rest of my life. But yeah, going back on script. Being a young adult in San Luis Obispo, it is nearly impossible to avoid falling in love with nature. We are constantly surrounded by scenic views such as sky-high trees, green rolling mountains, and a variety of wildlife. Growing up, like many others in SLO, I was exposed to the beauty of Mother Nature, being able to go hiking, birdwatching, and camping with my family nearly every weekend. However, over my lifetime, I've already begun to see the changes that scientists have deemed climate change. Raging fires, droughts, and poorer air quality than ever before. Now I don't need to tell you how many countless ways climate change has already affected our hometown, and not to mention the ever-growing people of the world. But I will tell you that the youth of today stand idly by like the generations before us. There will hardly be anything left worth saving. Over the past few months, our team has created a proposal of the way that, of the ways that students, teachers, and school administration can help put an end to the various ways that SLO helps fuel the fire that is climate change. As a daughter, student, and climate activist, I want to help our county be the most environmentally conscious it can be.
Thank you. Okay, then we have Damian Gutierrez, followed by Quinn Brady.
All right, hey everyone. My name is Damian, and I just want to thank everyone for coming out here, and I sincerely appreciate everyone for being here. But the thing I think we forget to do is appreciate the people that in our community that feel they're not making an impact when truly they are the ones making the most impact in our society. And one example of this was one of my grandmothers. And the cool thing about my grandma was that 2 years ago she actually told me that when she took care of me as a child, she would feed me vegan food, and that was crazy. And on that same day, she took me out to her brother's farm, and she actually like showed me the whole process of like, oh, this is how you get your food and whatnot. And at the time, I was 13, so that really left a mark on me. And ever since that day, you know, the next day, of course, I just couldn't eat like animal product, and I think that was so inspirational because, you know, here's an old woman telling me, you know, that to change, And last year, over the summer, she passed away to pancreatic cancer. And before she passed away, she actually told me to inspire others and to get involved in the community, because the youth is what matters the most. And she said this is coming from a dying person, which I thought was funny, but you know, it just goes to show, like, she didn't really involve, well, she involved herself a lot, but she wasn't, you know, really appreciated. And you know, it's true that the youth is the most important thing in our generation. You know, in living in such a toxic and lonely household that I do, I want to find some sort of future or some sort of hope. And you know, the impact of climate change is really taking that away from me. And I don't want to have to, you know, wake up every day and think, you know, what's even the point of, you know, going forward if we're just going to get opposed by the ignorant people that, you know, don't care enough or aren't willing to change. And I realized there's always going to be an opposition, and you know, we just have to kind of ignore that. And in order to ignore that, we need to keep making changes, even though they're small. As long as we maintain ourselves and we continue moving forward with tackling this problem of climate change, I feel like we can make a great impact, and it's the only way we'll find a future. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I don't have a request to speak. Did you submit one?
Yeah, you just
Oh, you are Quinn Brady.
Yeah.
Okay, go.
I know there's two Quinns tonight. My name is Quinn Brady, and this is Brightly. She's a kindergartner at Baywood. And tonight I'm here on behalf of the Slow Climate Coalition to echo and support the students, these great leaders who are expressing their interest in you supporting the district, the agendizing and moving forward with the development of a sustainability plan. So I'm just going to read this note from the Climate Coalition. The Climate Coalition is a countywide group consisting of educators, activists, builders, business owners, sustainability experts, students, parents, and a coalition of organizations. We work collaboratively with our community members, cities, and elected leadership to bring to life high-impact climate solutions to assure a vibrant, just, and resilient Central Coast. We actively work in collaboration with the City of SLO and Cal Poly, as well as newly Camp SLO, which has boldly decided to match the City of SLO's net zero goal of 2035. Over the coming years, we will be looking to build this foundation by strengthening partnerships with cities and organizations across the region, and tonight our invitation is for you to join us. You and I know the facts. We can no longer ignore the effects of climate change, and it is our responsibility to take action now to assure a thriving future for the next generations. Schools have the potential to make positive, tangible environmental change in the world while teaching students to be stewards of their communities, the earth, and its resources. The decision to integrate sustainability into the district's organizational culture and curriculum will reduce the district's environmental footprint, support student achievement, develop the next generation of environmental stewards, and will generate cost savings. But one of the most important parts of this to me is that this is a powerful and important opportunity for all of us to create deeper collaboration with other entities while building meaningful connections, empowering relationships, and resilience on the Central Coast. Moving forward with a thoughtful and forward-thinking sustainability plan is an opportunity for the district to expand its community collaboration in a way that benefits students, families, and the strength of the community as a whole. You are already beautifully supporting the growth of young people in this community, and as a parent and advocate for climate solutions, we urge you to agendize and bring action to moving forward with the sustainability plan. And I'd also just add that I think this really complements the work that you are so you're taking great leadership and already doing on equity and inclusion. We know that climate solutions promote equity within our communities. This community has an abundance of people and planet-focused resources already and a lot of experience in the implementation of sustainable practices. And the Climate Coalition would be excited and honored to support your efforts moving forward. And we just like to offer our resources and the knowledge that we have collectively with hundreds of people that are already working on climate solutions if you choose to move forward with this. Thank you for your time, your service, your leadership, and thoughtful approach to what moves our students and community forward.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who did not submit a written request but who would like to address the board at this time? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll close public comment.
Thank you very much, everybody who came out this evening to speak with us. All right, we're moving on to the superintendent's updates, and first is 7.01, the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so we have a coming up for the board, we have a safety update, so we'll kind of update the board on Resolute and Associates and the work that they've been doing. I will give a quick synopsis. We have three volumes of their five volumes that they're putting together for us, so we're actually meeting as a safety group to go over a whole mental health plan for the school district, as well as emergency and operations plan. So very excited to review that Thursday with the rest of the admin team, as well as the district team. We finished our last LCAT meeting today, so Kim and myself, Dr. Prater, actually joined us to talk with the district staff today at the district office and kind of let them in on the budget, LCAT plan, those types of things, get their feedback. So that was nice. And Kim, I'm sure, can share a lot of LCAT where we're headed coming up. And then lastly, the governor came out with his budget, which I shared in Friday notes last Friday. So for us as a basic aid school district, there wasn't really, I mean, other than really a continuation of the special education funding at this point, there wasn't too much that was actually in the budget, the governor's budget, as of January. Now, what we all know is that's going to change. So a lot of things happen. There's a lot of advocacy around the STIRS and PERS still, right, with most of the districts throughout the state. I will be surprised if there isn't something that goes towards that purpose, because I do feel like, from what I've heard from school services and every time I go to a CBO meeting, that probably half the school districts in the state of California are going to go bankrupt at the current rate that we're at. In terms of the increases in STIRS and PERS, if they don't, you know, have some major increases in funding for most school districts. So that it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I did read the governor's budget through, and it was interesting how they, in the wording of it, basically said that how districts will benefit this fiscal year as well as next fiscal year based on the allocation that was given in 1920. So kind of it's just an interesting dynamic where they were kind of taking credit for this coming year with money that they gave us last year. So hopefully that's something that comes out of a lot of advocacy and talks coming up. And I will, of course, keep you updated on anything that I hear and find out.
All right. Looks like Mr. Unger.
So do you think we'll be able to pick up any money on the governor's preschool or teacher recruitment initiatives?
You know, I'm not positive with those. A lot of those are focused on really low income school districts that have a lot of needs. So we'll see how that, you know, how it pans out. I will tell you that our employees are benefiting from some of the grants that have come up. We actually talked about this in cabinet on Monday. So they have the Teach Bilingual Grant program that you can actually pull up at the County Office of Education, as well as there's some special ed funding. So we have paraeducators that are being reimbursed to become special ed teachers. And so there's, Kristen shared, some significant checks that were written. I mean, several thousands of dollars to people to progress and move forward. And so Kristen has been sharing that in her personnel blog in terms of getting those bilingual or special ed certificates and helping our classified employees. So that's been a positive thing.
All right. Thank you. Education services update.
Great. I have lots of great things, like Mr. Pinkerton mentioned, to share with you about LCAP as well as the foundation. And just want to also give a shout out to Rick Mayfield and Lisa Stevens and Don Addis. Ms. Stevens is going to share tonight about a Baywood update. But they've been incredible at really gathering a variety of stakeholders and gathering input and really developing the Baywood program in such an inclusive manner that grabs a lot of different ideas. And I know that it will be a fantastic program because of the way that they're gathering input. So look forward to you seeing those presentations tonight. And then since we're here at Del Mar, just a big shout out for being named a California Distinguished School. It's incredible.
All right. And next we have a Measure D update.
Yeah, so interesting. I was going to highlight the vice president was talking about their dress-up days in the sock hop, right? Well, they had decades, so it was leading up to it. So I walked into the student services building my first day back, kind of check it out, see how the staff, make sure that the move went okay and everything. So I'm walking through, and it was 80s day. I had no idea it was 80s day. So most of the ladies in the front, the attendants, activities, they weren't dressed up. But there was one of the secretaries was full-on hair-high, 80s garb, you know, neon colors, everything. And I just thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe it's back. Maybe it's a new fashion and type of thing. And then when I went back to the principal secretary and the assistant principal secretary, they were both dressed up as well. So kind of, oh, okay, it's a dress-up day. I get it. But it was one of those things you don't ask. Okay, is it a dress-up day? Or yeah. So it was great. But the student services building in Morro Bay High, we have our grand opening coming up February 12th. We'll be sending out invites to the board. And it's, you know, again, kudos to Chris Bonin, his team, BG&T, the custodial staff there to get that move done, to get everyone in. You know, thanks go out to the Morro Bay staff for dealing with the transition and the change. We got the temporary classroom set up in the old gym, as well as the library. So a lot happened in a very short period of time. And again, school opened up. Kids got to go through, excited about the changes. And so it was a real positive start. And I think you're going to be impressed when we have our grand opening on the 12th. In terms of San Luis Obispo High School, we have a couple of projects, too, that are coming very close, right? The student services building there, as well as the new gymnasium should be end of February, mid-February, should be ready to be open, so making more transitions. So we'll be setting up those grand openings for those facilities as well. Upcoming, we have a couple of GMP improvements, amendments on the board agenda tonight, which I'll share later as well. So it was a lot happening on the Measure D front.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Prater.
And one last thing, since we're talking about awards and honors and great things that are happening. Over the winter break, I was notified that we were one of five school districts in the country acknowledged for what they call the National School Boards Association's Magna Award, and it's for our work with the Common Ground Advisory Task Force, which I just view as an extension of our work as our board and district's commitment for equity and inclusivity. And so tackling difficult things is what this advisory group is about, and it's paying off in many ways. Tomorrow, as a note, tomorrow we will be on a site visit with the Common Ground group at Hawthorne Elementary from 11 to 1. And 11 to noon, we'll actually have classroom visits. We're actually going to go through 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade classrooms. And then from noon to about 12 to 12:15, we'll go out on the blacktop and observe kids at lunch and have the opportunity to talk to some students. And then at 12:15, we'll head into the library, and we'll have a student, staff, and parent panel. So if you're interested in joining us, you're more than welcome.
Thank you. All right. Next, we have an update on the Coastal Bilingual Program.
Yes, hello again. As Mrs. McGrath mentioned, and she's been right in there with us, we meet every Friday morning, Dawn Addis, Lisa Stevens, myself and Mrs. McGrath, to plan and you know, organize all the different events we've had with community engagement. And Mrs. Stevens will give us the update tonight, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, back again. I'm not going to be probably as engaging as my students, but I'll try. They're amazing. But gosh, I'm so excited to update you on all of the work that we've been doing rolling out our bilingual program for 2020. I feel like we've really started to gain a lot of momentum. The community outreach has been amazing, and the team we have together to build this vision together is just phenomenal. So tonight I'm going to walk you through, again, kind of the progress, engagement, and input, talk to you a little bit about our communication updates and our focus group updates, and then we're going to go real specific into our enrollment plan. plan. So we have spent countless hours teasing out what we think is every possible scenario. You know, if you were born on a Friday and you live on 10th Street, what enrollment group are you going to be in? Right? Because there's so many scenarios. But I think we have a really comprehensive plan that I want to lay out with you and get your feedback on. And then talk to you a little bit about our Kinder events and our work in progress. So just to kind of review a little bit about our process and engagement and input, you know, thanks to your approval in September that we are starting this planning process. And really this engagement process is that accordion process that we have. Like Mrs. McGrath and Mr. Mayfield talked about, every Friday we meet with kind of that internal group. And then we have our, which is our district leadership group. Then we have our advisory committee that's made of a sprinkle of different parents, community members, EL, families, incoming families, teachers, staff members. That makes up our advisory committee. And then we have these various focus groups that are focusing on a specific item for our program that then comes back to our advisory committee and comes back to our district leadership. So just the amount of voices that we have and different viewpoints has just been phenomenal to have all these different great brains around how are we building this really comprehensive, incredible program for our coastal students. And then I'm going to talk to you about all the different input opportunities that we've had as well, which has been amazing to see. So starting with our communication updates, a couple of the things that we've done. One is we updated our website, our Baywood website, thanks to a lot of the feedback from our enrollment committee. So when we were talking to them, a lot of them were talking about, gosh, if I'm an incoming parent in kindergarten and I don't know where to go, where do I find all these different forms? So we made some direct links to especially the part that talks about where is your neighborhood school. So some of them were talking about, I'm not really sure even where to go sometimes for my neighborhood school. So we made some updates to our website with just the enrollment piece to have it be really clear for new parents and where to go to. And that was great feedback from the families that were a part of our enrollment committee. We've started our flyer distribution, so we've made kind of a one-pager of what is bilingual education, what's happening at Baywood, what are these important dates, and we're really blasting that throughout the coast. We have Erin Clyburn, who's going to be meeting with all the preschools on the coast and going out to even library time, story times, doctor's offices, wherever we know that there's a 0-4 student, we're going to find them and we're going to give them the information about our wonderful program. So we also talked about the sign on Los Sosos Valley Road that we're going to have a little upcoming, you know, Kinder registration. It's tricky. I'd love your help. It's what, like 12 characters and like, yeah, something crazy. So we're trying to figure out how to make that abbreviated where we're not confusing people more than giving information. But I think that'll be a great, you know, the one right on South Bay Boulevard and Los Sosos Valley Road there. We'll get something on there for Kinder registration. We also ordered banners that we're going to put around the exterior of our school starting in the next few weeks. We just ordered them today, talking about Kinder registration, Kinder Roundup, that we're going bilingual. So it's going to be mapped around our entire school as well. Don and I were able to go to the Los Sosos. We also did preschool visits. I presented at our own preschool, and we also had a parent that presented at the First Five committee as well to give them information about the bilingual program. Don and myself also went to the Los Sosos Rotary and talked to them about it. They were also super excited to support the program. I was also able to go to Monarch Grove's ELAC in December and talk to their EL families about it and give them more information. We had our Cafecito in December, and what was great about that, we had delicious pan dulce, so you'll have to join us for our next one, thanks to Mr. Mayfield. And what was great about that is that we had quite a few incoming families who were not yet in our district show up. So it was great to see that our outreach had reached different parent participation groups. One found about it through parent participation, one from the library, I think. So it was great to see, you know, families that aren't even yet in our district come to our Cafecito and learn more about it. So that was wonderful. We almost took the internet down last week with our Facebook Live because we had so many hits. It was amazing. I think we were up to 3,000 views, I think, the last time I checked, which is amazing. So just seeing how that social media just gets spread more and more was amazing. Mayor Heidi Harmon even wrote in a comment as we were talking, just expressing her support of the program and how excited she was to have another dual immersion program within the county, which was amazing. So that was really fun to do. And then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about our advisory committee and focus groups and kind of what we've been working on with that. So our enrollment focus group has been amazing. We even had a teacher from Monarch Grove join us. Ms. Frame joined us a few times. Was just an amazing eclectic group of parents, incoming parents, current parents, Monarch Grove parents. And we met four times for about 2 hours each. And wow, talk about the brain power in that room to look through this enrollment plan and literally think about student to student, how would this plan affect them? So it was a wonderful group of really critical thinkers that brought a lot to the table and a lot of different ideas that we took and met on Friday and, okay, let's get to work on this. So, again, I'll go into deeper what that work was in just a few minutes. Thanks to Diane Frost, we've had two wonderful meetings about special education. We have a couple of parents on that who are special educators. Emily Capilano is a part of that. Mr. Dale, who's my special day teacher. Our new RSP teacher as well is a part of that. Our last meeting was fascinating. Diane was able to invite two parents of students with IEPs who attend Pacheco. And it was so valuable to hear the parent perspective and how they navigated the IEP process or the special education process in a dual immersion setting. So it was fascinating to hear, you know, some of their fears of, oh gosh, can they learn in two languages? And what does that look like? And how do we make goals in an IEP around two languages? And for us to ask questions of how can we better support families that might feel uncertain about this special ed part with dual language immersion. And they were great advocates, and we were even talking about, you know, connecting them with families who might be concerned about that, that they could be great voices for our community and that within special ed. So that was really fascinating. We have another meeting this Friday where we'll dive deeper into what that looks like as well. Then we have our current student meeting. So yesterday I met with our current families, first through fifth, and we brainstormed short-term and long-term goals of what can that look like for our site so that we don't have two separate sites, right? I talk a lot to my families about, you know, yes, I want to build this rigorous, amazing kinder program, but equally as important are your first through fifth grade students, right, as a whole. So how are we keeping Baywood as one? So we had so many amazing ideas from families of what are some different things maybe with Spanish that we could do in first through fifth, different cultural activities, how can we bring families together around language, and it was just a really great brainstorming time to talk about different ideas of what we can do school-wide, so not just focusing on that kinder cohort. We'll be bringing those ideas back to our advisory committee in 2 weeks and talking to them about what some of those first through fifth ideas are as well, but that was really exciting last night to meet with those families. And then I will invite you to any of these focus groups, but our program development, I have to say, is amazing. It's with our teachers, and you know, we tried to just have one teacher per grade level because I didn't want to have it end up being like another whole staff meeting where, you know, teachers have to stay another day. And I have to say, after our last meeting, two other teachers came up to me and said, so I've heard about this program development focus group, and I'd really like to be a part of it. And I said, of course, come and join us. That it's just this brainstorming time of how are we building this school? What are we making this school together? And it just is electrifying. Amy Shields actually is my mentor, and she joined us last time, and she left going, oh my gosh, I want to be a part of this. What are we doing? How do we keep moving on with this? Because it's just the excitement about building this program together has just been amazing. So we started with the guiding principles of dual language immersion and looking at program structure. And what's great is that they actually have a rubric of 1 to 4 of what does the program structure look like, and a 4 being like an exemplar dual immersion program. So obviously we're not at a 4 yet, right? But we were looking at that rubric and seeing, okay, so what are some short-term goals and long-term goals that we can make as we're building this program together? So we kind of did a gallery walk of all of our goals of these, you know, strong parts of a program that we want to build together. And then from there, we also dove into our last meeting, was last week, I think, and looked at also that first through fifth grade ideas and what we're doing. What I think is so amazing is that the three bilingual teachers I I have. I may have mentioned this before, but they're giving up 3 days of their spring break to travel with me to Kabe to continue their learning. So five of us from Baywood are going to Kabe over spring break to kind of deepen our learning. After those meetings, I feel like I also get texts from them at night like, so I'm still reading about this article, or check this out, I have this idea. And just that excitement of building this program has been just amazing. So feel really lucky to have such a great support system and just such a great vision of what we want Baywood to be. It's already a great school, but just adding all these wonderful things to it is really exciting. So now I want to dive into the wonderful, exciting part of enrollment, right? Who gets in? Who's coming? So what we did in our enrollment focus group is we spent two meetings just looking at priority group one. And yes, I think you'll have a couple handouts to be able to look at parts of these. So what we did is we had an internal group that first kind of started this out with, you know, first Kim, myself, Mr. Mayfield, and Don Addis. Then we also invited the coastal principals to come be a part of that as well. And we know the person at the school, one of the most important people ever, is the secretaries, right? So we brought my secretary in and said, we know that you know all the answers for enrollment. So we started with that internal group of looking at the recommendations that Dr. Prater had brought to you when the original proposal was brought. And then from there, we brought it to our enrollment focus group. We spent two meetings just going super deep into priority group one, then spent another about 2 hours on priority group two and three. And then our last meeting was looking it over one last blush, but really detailed of, is there anything else we forgot, right? Then, when we thought that was pretty good to go, we then brought it back to our advisory committee. And they are, again, an amazing group of people. And we spent another about 2 hours going through, after the 8 hours, plus probably about 4 hours more from internal groups, of really looking through that one more time with our advisory committee. And they came back with some wonderful things that, like, oh, we hadn't thought about that, or, oh, we should maybe just tweak that language just a little bit. Nothing big and, you know, monumental, but just some little tweaks. So we re-emailed it out again last week to the enrollment committee and to the advisory committee, and I think we landed on a really strong you know, flowchart and proposal. So I'm just going to kind of walk you through it, and feel free to stop me with questions at any time too. So you have two documents in front of you. I'm a visual learner, so I love the flowchart because I feel like it's really easy to comprehend. And we're thinking that at school sites, the flowchart is going to be a wonderful way for secretaries to go, you want bilingual education, you're from here, this is where you go, right? But I'm going to actually talk you through this part here. But they're both the same thing, obviously. This, to me, just looks a lot friendlier than going through all the meat of it. But I want to make sure that you understand the meat of it as well. So if we're looking at priority group one, and again, we're talking about open enrollment in the month of March, right? Looking at the recommendation from Dr. Prater, we were looking at students that live within the Baywood school boundary, younger siblings of students that are currently attending Baywood, Spanish primary ELs, and then we gave those that priority, so coastal primary Spanish-speaking ELs, and then children of staff members who work a minimum of 0.5 FTE at Baywood. So we wanted to put that clarification in there as well. So then those additional details in that priority group one is so that if you're an incoming kinder student and you want dual immersion, and you are fit one of those criteria, you enroll at Baywood. Okay. After open enrollment starts, so we were closes. You know, always there's a couple that come in, you know, after that time period, but we're really trying to make that push of March is your time. They're offered dual immersion on a space available basis. So we'll probably have to hold, you know, just a few spaces just for that, you know, those students that come at the beginning. Older siblings of incoming kinder, Baywood kinder students who currently attend Monarch or Del Mar would follow the existing open enrollment process to change schools on a regular basis. So if there's a family that is now in Baywood, but they have their child over at Monarch, that we would do the same open enrollment process, right, to have them switch schools. But that's only going to be for the grade levels that are not a part of the dual immersion program. Right, so you'll have to think about as the grade levels start to go up, that if there's a student, let's say, that comes comes in, but their sibling is at Monarch, that if we have space, obviously they come on over with them. But as you know, next year, in 2 years, it'll be first, you know, kinder and first. They wouldn't be able to transfer over in first grade into a dual immersion program. Does that make sense? Okay. And then incoming kinder students with an older sibling at Pacheco would follow the open enrollment guidelines. So they would still, you know, we want to keep families together. So if they have a sibling at Pacheco, they can still opt to go to Pacheco, but we would love for them to come to the coastal school. But we know for families, if you already have a student there, that you may want to keep them together, but we would love for them to offer them the position, you know, to have a spot at Baywood, but if they have a sibling already over there, we would honor that. Clear as mud. Is that okay? Okay. Yeah. All right, so that's priority group one. We're good with that? Okay. Priority group two, we're going to move over to Del Mar and Monarch. So students in the Del Mar or Monarch boundaries may apply to Baywood or Pacheco. So what would happen is incoming kinder students will have the opportunity to apply for the dual language immersion at Baywood. If there are more applicants than spots available at Baywood, a lottery will be held. Those students who are not accommodated through the lottery at Baywood may opt to the Pacheco lottery. Okay? So that's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, I joke that I seriously want to go around to the coast and knock on every door and say, do you have a child that will be 5 by September 1st? Do you have a child that will be 5 by September 1st to know how many kids we're getting, right? We just don't know. Our hope is that obviously we can accommodate both groups, priority group 1 and 2 would be awesome, right? But we just don't know how many students we'll be getting. So if there are more spaces or more applicants and spaces, then we will go to a lottery. And if they don't get into the lottery at Baywood, they would have the opportunity to also be in the Pacheco lottery. So it would be two lotteries that they would be able to be a part of. Incoming kinder students with an older sibling at Pacheco will follow the established open enrollment guidelines for Pacheco. And if these students wish to apply for Baywood, then they would do so during the open enrollment process. So the same thing, honoring keeping siblings together and families together. And then we will also provide transportation for students that would like to come from Del Mar or Monarch to Baywood. Okay, so that's our coastal part. Good with that so far? Okay, so then priority group three. So if students choose not to go to a bilingual setting, then incoming kinder students who select English-only instruction at a school other than Baywood are guaranteed placement either at Monarch Grove or at Del Mar, and efforts will be made to place students at the coastal school of preference whenever possible. So if they do not wish to have bilingual education, they can say, okay, I'd rather go to Monarch, or I'd rather come, you know, I work in Morro Bay, I'd rather come over here to Del Mar. And so obviously we will do our very best to have them have their first preference, but we have to look at numbers, and we can't have, you know, 50 or, you know, 80-something at one school and not that many at another. So we would do, obviously, our very best to accommodate. Incoming students who are new to the area after open enrollment can choose English only on the coast, and they would use the same existing administrative transfer process. So in all of these requests, we're trying to get done during open enrollment, right, during that month of March. But we know, again, there's so many, I mean, just last Friday, we thought, what about these scenarios? And what about this scenario? There's so many scenarios that, you know, will come up, but we're going to do our best during open enrollment to get as much of that taken care of as possible. Again, there will be transportation available for attendance at Monarch Grove and Del Mar. And then another great point that came up in our enrollment committee is if there was an involuntary transfer. So let's say Monarch Grove is absolutely full and a student, you know, will need to come over here to Del Mar, even though Monarch Grove was their first choice. We talked about the district paying for that bus for that child so that if it's an involuntary transfer, that the district would provide that transportation at no cost. So knowing that, and again, hopefully that won't be an issue or won't happen, but honoring that if there wasn't space for their first choice, that they will get to the school that they need to get to. Okay. And so preschool, we're going to continue our existing preschool at Baywood with the exploration of some elements of bilingual education. And then just a clarifier that enrollment in Baywood preschool does not guarantee that you are automatically in the program. So the same thing at Pacheco, right, that you still have to go through the same process to apply, that it's not guaranteed that then you're automatically into Baywood or to Pacheco. Again, like I said before, the lottery process, that if there are more spaces available than more applicants than space available, a lottery would be held. I believe we already have the date in mid-April, and it's about 1 week before Pacheco's lottery. So Baywood would have a lottery first if we need one, and then Pacheco would have their lottery after that. So again, my hope is that we can accommodate every coastal family that wants it, but we'll just have to see who shows up in March, right? We will still keep the same appeals process that is happening right now. And then for children of San Luis Coastal staff members, so if they are not in priority group one, they would follow the district enrollment guidelines. And so that's a little bit of a change where it's, if you're working at the school site, 0.5 or more. So I believe there's an AR that's going to be representing that moving forward as well. So just making sure that we have all of that together and all of our different pieces. So this also reflects the same as the flow chart. So this is going to be great. We're going to be meeting with secretaries at the right before open enrollment to walk them through this process to make sure that it's super clear. I think we'll need to do it sooner than later because I think I already got two calls yesterday about the process and how do I get in, where do I go, when can I start. So so it's exciting to hear the buzz that's already around with that. Okay. Just move into a couple more things. Let's see. So my last things are just about kinder events, that we're going to have kinder orientation where I'm going to be talking about the kinder program and what it's going to look like in 9010. I have two dates in February and one in March for parents to be a part of. So really the month of February is really going to be a lot of outreach to all of our preschools on the coast, all of, you know, anywhere that has a 4 to 5 year old, we're going to be finding them to have them come and learn more about the program. Open enrollment again is in March, and then if we need a lottery, we'll do that in April, and then we have our kinder roundup, and then we'll do our first play date with our kinder cohort in May. So we're excited about those upcoming events. And so just in summary, I feel so lucky to have such wonderful support. I mean, from the district level, from all of you, from our community members, it's just been amazing to see how many people are coming out to support this program and to build this vision together. My PTA has, you know, talked to me about so many great ideas of how can we continue to bring families together. Seeing, you know, families yesterday, we actually, at our first through five, we had a grandma that came as well that said, I used to teach bilingual education years ago, and I heard you're having this meeting, and she came and joined us as well. So just to see that engagement and that excitement, I just feel so lucky to be a part of it and so lucky to be able to offer that to our students on the coast. So really appreciate all of your support and invite you out to any of our meetings at any time if you ever want to come out and see what we're doing to get it started.
Thank you. Okay. All right, I see Mr. Unger's light on.
Great.
You talked about preschool. Mm-hmm. What are we thinking about for transitional kindergarten?
Good question. Let's do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, go for it.
Yeah, transitional kindergarten was, I don't know if problem is the word, but a challenge on the coast, especially this year. We had high numbers. And so I met with all three coastal principals to discuss how we might alleviate some of those issues moving forward. And what we're going to do is during the traditional open enrollment period, we accept applications in, but we're going to wait a little longer because the preschool crowd seems to be one that does come in after open enrollment. If you're not a regular part of the district community, you're in the 0 to 4 population, it's more difficult to get the information. So we're going to wait a little longer and get all the applications in before we sit down and go through and make sure that we have all the right families in the TK and preschool programs along the coast. And we've also had discussions on kind of softening some of the limits around the preschool, well, not preschool because it's done by income, but transitional kindergarten for sure. We had to offer a few people on the coast spots in town this year because we were so impacted. And so we're talking also about perhaps moving personnel around, just taking a closer look at TK as we go, as we move forward.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Oh, Ms. Fine. I just wanted to compliment the process, because it has been very, very robust. Parents come and to these meetings, and they have great ideas. They're carefully reading that information. I mean, I haven't been to very many, but it's been great to observe. I did have two things I wanted to ask. Is one, the appeal process. What is that in our district?
Yeah, basically, if a parent, you know, says, hey, I'd like to appeal this process, then they're referred to Mrs. McGrath, and she reviews the case, meets with the family, and makes a decision on the outcome based on the circumstances of that particular case.
Are there guidelines, or, I mean,
since I've been in the position, I've not had a lottery appeal.
Okay.
I could be, partly be because we're very transparent about the process.
Yeah.
We invite people. We have a, you know, open random sampling that picks the numbers, computer-based. People are there, understand the process. Mm-hmm. Ms. Harrigan does a great job of explaining the process to people individually on the phone. And so since I've been here, I haven't had an appeal related to this topic.
Okay. I didn't see that before. The other thing I did want to mention, and when you were bringing up TK, and Dr. Prater, you can address this. When I was at a training for new board members, and they said, and I don't know, that if you are a basic aid district, that the regulations, because you're really not mandated to provide TK, that the regulations of how you do TK are not guided by the state. And so they were saying that in, you know, their districts, they have different, because unlike other districts. So I don't know if that's true or not, but it was a superintendent was speaking about that. So,
yeah, we actually are talking about this inside cabinet, about ways we could, as Mr. Mayfield said, what were the words
soften.
You used?
Soften.
Is that the word we're using? Soften the, in other words, become creative. And I think to be more concrete about this, is not all kids are ready for kindergarten, uh-huh. and that extra year of TK is really great. And not all kids who enroll in kindergarten are had TK. So part of the softening could be that we as a district start examining ways, especially our kiddos who struggle or who are in maybe just developmentally, the exposure they've had, maybe they're placed in kindergarten traditionally, but we could make the decision to place that child in TK, giving them 2 years. And that also helps the teacher in both settings give that child a closer look and maybe better attention along the way. So I think it gives our TK and kindergarten. We were talking about getting our preschool TK and kindergarten continuum, get the teachers together and talk about creative ways we could address this. It's especially important for the kiddos that whose parents enroll them at the last minute in kindergarten. And now that, but yet they're not nearly where the core group is. Mm-hmm. And so then the kindergarten teacher, Ms. Frame and I were actually talking about this, the kindergarten teacher then has this tremendous range. Mm-hmm. Yet next door we have a TK class, and yet we're rigid in our examination of that placement. So that's really what we're talking about inside inside our cabinet team to then explore inside our LCAP plan.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the superintendent, he was correct in saying that it was that we don't have to follow the same mandates that another type of district does.
Well, I am not going to go that far because
okay.
I have
okay.
not spoken to an attorney on this.
Okay.
But
no.
But what I'm seeing is that the state itself is questioning the very parameters of TK.
Okay.
Especially with more and more focus on early childhood education. So it's starting to become more clear that we have more work to do as we look inside, more closely inside of the preschool TK-K continuum.
I think one of the superintendents there referred to it as redshirting.
maybe.
Basically for, you know, for parents who were aware but that are at-risk families. So I appreciate that. Thank you. And it's been a very robust process. They appreciate all the hard work. And thank you.
We had several cases of students born in August eligible for kindergarten that we referred to the SST process at parent request who eventually made it into TK classes.
Thank you. Anyone else? Do you have a question?
I do have a question. I understand wanting to be able to and potentially having the latitude to look at students in TK, but students who are chronologically, you know, are age ready for kindergarten and their parents want them to be kindergartners, do we potentially have the latitude to say, no, we think developmentally you are a transitional kindergartner?
It would only be a recommendation.
It could only be a recommendation.
If a child was in preschool, we would sit down with the parent, as we do with all parents, to say, you know, here's our take on your child's readiness for kindergarten. And the teachers do a great job of going through that, you know, readiness. And there are times where they say, you know, we think an extra year might be very helpful to your child, or they're not quite ready. But that's a parent decision whether or not they accept that recommendation. If a child is eligible for kindergarten, they have the right to place that child in kindergarten.
Okay, so my own grandson was did 2 years because developmentally he wasn't ready. So I totally understand, you know, parents recognizing that and choosing to exercise that option. But if a child is 5 years old and their parents want them to be a kindergartner, then they will be one.
By all means. And even the idea of repeating kindergarten, that has to be by agreement with the parent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayfield.
You bet.
Ms. Prine?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. Is kindergarten still not mandated by the state of California?
I believe that's correct.
Wow. Okay.
6 years old is the rule. But we don't like to tell anybody that.
No, I mean, I just, but, you know, the state's vote. Thank you. Sorry about that.
According to the California Department of Education website, the law applies equally to all districts, whether they receive state revenue limit funding or are basic aid.
Well, I've heard that argument before, that conversation. All right, anyone else on this? Thank you so much. We are all very excited about this and appreciate the work that you're putting in at this stage to make it a successful program. So thank you.
Mrs. Stevens has worked tirelessly, and you can just feel her enthusiasm.
Yeah.
For. She's done an outstanding job.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for filling us in. We appreciate it.
Great.
All right. Next is 8.02, Elementary Achievement Data Review.
Yeah, I want to share with you the trimester one benchmarks from elementary, and we have scores on mathematics, reading for K-2 and for 3-6. And then writing as well. And then at the end, one of the things we've been focusing on is, you know, we usually provide broad data to the board and for public consumption as well. But I asked Mrs. Gould to join me tonight to share what it looks like at the school site level and how teachers and principals get down to individual students and really dig into the data to make sure that the appropriate children are placed in interventions at the school site level. So we'll do that. She'll do that and share with us later on.
Okay.
I lost it there.
There we go. Whoop. There we are.
So we'll first start with trimester expectations on mathematics. This is K-5 Bridges. All students are given end of the trimester assessments, and this is over the last 3 years. So you can see that students who met or exceeded, there were 76% of those students, 16% approaching, which we feel is on target, and then about 8% this year. And those numbers have improved over time. That's K-5.
benchmark assessments. Okay, broken out by subgroup, you'll see the same district numbers at the very top. Non-socioeconomically disadvantaged, 96% of those students are where they should be. 84% of socioeconomically disadvantaged on this particular assessment. 80% of English learners. 91% of RFEP students or redesignated fluent English proficient students, and about 81% of students with disabilities. BAS is a reading benchmark assessment system, reading assessment for students in kindergarten through second grade. And the dark green at the top is met the end of the year proficiency. The lighter green in the middle is met the trimester benchmark, so they're on course to meet the end of the year proficiency level. And then the bottom number in yellow is those students who have not yet made the mark. So about 85% this year have either met the trimester benchmark or the end of the year benchmark already in K-2 reading. This again is the same BAS K-2 reading assessments broken out by subgroup, with the district numbers at the top, and you can see the subgroups as they go down. This is a comprehensive one-on-one teacher-student assessment. Teachers get release days provided by the district to meet with students one-on-one and go through this assessment where they read and check for comprehension and where the student is able to independently read the text. SRI is the third through sixth grade reading assessment, and we're looking in depth this year at replacing the SRI, the Scholastic Reading Inventory. I think now it's just called the Reading Inventory, they changed the name on it for some reason. It is not that one-to-one assessment, and it's one of those things where, the more time you spend, usually the more you get out of it, but it's very time-consuming to do the BAS assessment. This is students going into a computer lab or working on Chromebooks in a classroom and all taking the assessment together. I would say that the SRI, though, it's a very difficult test and rigorous test for students to take, but those are the numbers of the students meeting the meeting or exceeding in the dark green and approaching in the light green for the first trimester and reading for third through sixth grade. This is broken out, the same SRI, by subgroup. Our redesignated fluent English proficient students do quite well in this assessment. And then on writing, this is on-demand writing, first trimester, and you can see the numbers have stayed pretty stable over time. Our writing scores have been good since writing is one of the first things that we adopted in terms of the workshop model many years ago. And we did a lot of in-depth training and professional development, releasing teachers to come to the district office and collaborating on writing scoring, and our writing scores have been pretty stable over time. These are the writing scores broken out by subgroup. Okay, and now we'll have Mrs. Gould come up and share what this data looks like at a site level and how she and her team dive into what it looks like in each individual classroom. Mm-hmm.
Can I just ask one quick question?
Mm-hmm.
So, I know I've asked you this already, but just to be sure. So, on when we're doing the reporting out and it meets, exceeds, and not yet, I mentioned that I'm used to seeing the four different breakdowns, and I guess can you explain what the difference is between?
Yeah. So those are commonly used for the SBAC, and they have four different categories of student achievement with scaled scores that go along with each of those particular categories. And for trimester benchmark, we don't use that same scale.
And so what are the four categories?
Meter, exceed, approaching, and then not yet.
Approaching. Okay.
Approaching is the.
All right.
But we consider those students to be on target for the end of the year assessment.
Thank you.
It's a big piece of paper.
Okay. Can I get a rest?
Good evening. I'm Janet Gould.
principal of your 2018 and 2020 California Distinguished School.
Hey,
thanks, Kim. I have a presentation they're going to bring up. Oh, and it's right here. Okay, so I'm going to talk this evening about what we do with our data once we get it. So the first thing I'm showing you, I think we're one slide. First thing I want to talk about is what are the trimester assessments. So the trimester assessments we have are reading for the benchmark assessment for K-2. The reading for our third through sixth grade is the Scholastic Reading Inventory, or the SRI, or the RI. Writing, we do an on-demand first through sixth grade. In kindergarten, they actually start theirs, or they do their first one in January, so they will be doing it for the rest of the year. And then math trimester assessment is kindergarten through fifth grade. The first thing we do with our data is, this is a replica of the graphs that you have in our SPSAs. So what I'm doing is I'm taking my SPSA where we set our data and our goals. We set our goals for the year. I'm adding in the green, which is my trimester one data, adding in the district's trimester one data as well. And then also adding in where we are, where we were as a school site in the previous year. So this allows us to look at, you see in this one, where we are as a whole school and where we are as a grade level on the different benchmark assessments. And so the example I used here was for mathematics. So we're able to gather this information from Illuminate, which is kind of our district data system. And once we put this information together, we share it out in our school site council, share it out at leadership team, and then teachers use this data during their grade level planning. For each of the different assessments, we look at whole school, each grade level, and then we also look at our non-socioeconomically disadvantaged, our socioeconomically disadvantaged, SED, EL, our RFEP students and students with disabilities. So this is just an example of when we first get the data, looking at it kind of from a school-wide perspective. We then take it a step further, and I put together a classroom profile sheet for every single teacher. So that's the one you have in front of you. It's kind of hard to see it up there, so I thought I'd blow up a copy and give it to you. All the way over on the left is where we have the students' names. So obviously I've taken out the students' names and the teachers' names. But this gives demographic information, so the teachers get the opportunity to review if these are socioeconomically disadvantaged students, if they're English learners, what their LPAC, which is their EL assessment, levels were in the prior year. So for this one I had 17-18 and 18-19. Then we look at how did they do on the benchmark assessment system, and then we look at their Scholastic reading score. For the benchmark assessment, the reason some students have a mark and others do not is because the benchmark is a K-2 assessment, but for some of our students in the third through fifth grade, if they're struggling, we will give them a benchmark assessment. So for a limited number of students, we also have benchmark assessment data entered. So we're able to see how did our students do in the SRI at the end of last year, so they would be as second grade students, and then corresponding what level does that account to. So are they one, not yet there, are they two, approaching, and then three is meeting and four is exceeding. And then we're able to look at, they took that assessment at the beginning of the year, and then they took that assessment in trimester one. So the teachers are able to look and see, are the students making growth in the area of reading through the indicator of the SRI. We have the on-demand score, which is for most of our grade levels narrative in the fall. They also do informational and persuasive throughout the year. And then we also look at the math trimester assessment and how students are doing on the trimester assessment. We've, the last couple years, as we have focused on chronic absenteeism, we've also started to include information on attendance and tardies. So the teachers, just as a quick overview of their entire class, can look and see which students, most of them are already aware of this, but the exact numbers of days that students have missed and for tardies. We also add on students that have are in interventions. We include that information in Illuminate, and so we're able to pull out which kids are in the different interventions. Okay. Now, once we have all of that data, what do we do with it? We review these at our grade level planning days, and then also it's something that are called data days, which is where our school intervention team gets together one grade level at a time, looks at how we're supporting kids, looks and sees how kids just did in the previous trimester, what interventions we need to expand, change, what students we need to add, drop, different things like that. So it gives teachers an opportunity to review student demographics. It allows them to monitor growth in their goals, and teachers set goals for their grade level, so their grade level is set in their SPSA. We want X percentage of our students proficient. But additionally, at the beginning of the year, I give something similar to this to all of the teachers, and they set an individual goal in reading, writing, and math for every single one of students in their class. So when they come to the first trimester, they have their individual goal sheets on all of their students, and then they're provided with this data so they can look and see, are my students progressing towards not only our school goals, but the individual goals that I've set for each student in my class. As I said, it allows you to monitor growth in reading. It allows you to identify students for intervention groups, and it allows us to monitor attendance. One of the other assessments that we do each trimester is mathematics. And we pull two reports from Illuminate that allow our teachers to dig deeper into the trimester math assessment. The graph on the left-hand side is an assessment matrix report. And what that does is the students' names would be are listed down on the left. And for each child, it shows how do they do overall on the whole assessment in one easy look. So the first column is overall on the test, how did they do? And then it's broken up by standards. So there's two different standards, and it tells for each individual question, and then gives an overall percentage correct for the standards. The yellow highlighted bar at the top tells how your class did overall, like what percentage of your class got that question correct. So from looking at this, teachers are able to say, oh, I see on question number 5, I have like the most yellows and a couple reds. I want to go, and when teachers have these graphs, they also have a copy of the assessment right in front of them, the answer key for the assessment, so they can go right to the assessment, and they can look and see, hey, what was that question? And then part of our math curriculum tells teachers, when the standards are taught, is the standard being introduced for the first time? Is it in the process of being spiraled? Or is this a standard that is supposed to be taught to mastery? So teachers can use that information to say, oh, this was an introduction, not so worried about that one. This one is in the spiraling, so I'm going to go forward into my teacher's guide book, and where this standard is taught again, I'm going to put a little sticky note, and I'm going to remind myself this is a standard we really need to focus on. Or if it was supposed to be mastered, and even if it's spiraling, are there some small group instruction that you want to pull back during your guided math time and really focus on groups of students on specific standards or types of questions in math? The graph on the right, what that does is it looks at, I can look at it as an individual teacher, as a classroom, or district-wide. So what that one does is the green shows like this percentage of the students got the answer correct, and the red is that percentage of the students missed the question. So I show my teachers, the one on the left shows you here's how you did in your class, and then I print them out one that says here's how we did as a grade level, and then here's how we did as a school. So what they'll notice in some of the grade levels, and they're able to have these conversations, hey, my kids did really well on this one. Yours not, you know, or my kid's not so much on this one, yours did great, hey, let's talk about what the instruction looked like and if we can learn from one another. So that's been a powerful use of the trimester one assessment. It also lets them compare it to district, and is this a question that was just really hard across the district, or is this one that our students struggled with more on average than what we saw other district students struggle with? So that's what we do when we look back for the trimester one assessment. And then the next thing we do with the trimester planning day is we look forward to the trimester two assessment. So what I do is I go back into last year's data. So I can print out for the teachers how their students did on the trimester two assessment last year. What it does is it just reminds them these were the standards or these were the type of questions that children really struggled with the most. They can look at individual teachers, they can look at grade levels, they can look at district, and that allows them to talk with one another about questions that children struggle with the most. It allows them to go into their grade books and note the areas that they really need additional focus to, be pre-planning for times when they probably will need to pull small groups for the students that struggle the most, but it just really supports them with their T2 planning. So finally, just thank you for the support. We have really felt like we've been able to make extremely valuable use of those grade level planning days to really dig deeper into what we're finding out about each student at the trimester assessment and make decisions really on the individual student basis to support all of the students that we have in our classrooms.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the board? Mr. Buckman.
Just one. So, I wasn't clear. You said you provided this to staff. So is this something that I would see at each school site?
Yes, what happens is I work with Darla to pull this report, to put together the report and illuminate. So we put together a custom report that has all of this data, and then we share it out with all of the elementary principals, so all of the principals have access to this. We've spent a couple years as Principals PLC sharing out our practices and data, sharing out what we do, sharing out all of the math information that I've shared with you tonight has also been shared with all of the principals here in the site. Then what I will do is I can customize it to myself, so like I have a fluency lab, which other sites might not have. So I can adjust it, add more information to my site based on site specifics. So there's a template that works for everyone, and then sites can modify it to their needs.
So I may be misunderstanding. So this is what I heard you say. You share this with other sites, but are the other sites taking advantage of the data that you're doing?
I would say the vast majority are, okay. And I'm not aware if any are not.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks for all this work. This is amazing.
Yeah. Ms. Bright.
Well, I can concur with Janet. I mean, when Ryan was passing this out, I got a little PTSD looking at, because it is shared, you know, it is at all sites. So I appreciate all the hard work. I did have a question, and really, I don't know, maybe for Rick, too. It's really... given that we've been doing this for a while, and I'm wondering, and I shared this with you, Rick, as we look for that LCAP, and you know, and we're looking at trends for the last 3 years or whatever, what would be maybe later on, what are the trends in our district data that are coming out that can guide the LCAP recommendations that the board, you know, will be. So I mean, it's I don't expect an answer, but it's we have this great information. You've been doing really deep work, and so looking at that district, I don't know. I mean, so I'm just putting that out.
Yeah, so
Great question. That is something we're discussing all the time. So looking at the data, looking at how our kids are doing, what is it that our teachers still need for that first best instruction to be the most powerful that it can be? And I think specific training and coaching on, you know, how to use workshop model to especially reach those particular subgroups of students that are in our schools is what we have been talking about to include in the next round of the LCAP. But that's a great question and in our discussion all the time.
Thank you for all your hard work, both of you.
Anyone else? Right. Thank you. Yeah, thanks very much. This is very valuable to kind of see the process and know what you do with it.
It's amazing work that happens at sites, and Janet's one of the best.
Yeah, thank you, Janet. Thanks very much. All right, next on the agenda is the foundation update. Thank you for coming.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. So I'm going to ask your indulgence a little bit. I know that I'm on your agenda as an update, but what I would like to do is take maybe just a couple extra minutes and handle this as a year in review, since this marks really the conclusion and of our first year and beginning of our second year. So I'm going to do a little bit more of a thorough look back as opposed to just a snapshot of what's happened since I was last in front of you. All right, so for those of you who have seen our materials, our case for support, hopefully you've seen this phrase before, which I really love because I think it captures so much about what we're trying to do, which is build a strong foundation for generations to come. And what I will say is 2019, year one, was really a building year. Over this year, we started really, first and foremost, working to unite our 27-member foundation board. We have a huge board. We have a diverse board of very incredible community leaders that represent a diversity of perspectives, expertise. These are alum, their parents, their community leaders, but they all come with slightly different passions, with different hopes, dreams, experiences. And so right out of the gate, we just spent a lot of time with the board working to develop a common vision of what we as an organization were hoping to do to come alongside the school district and really provide meaningful engagement and support on behalf of the students here in this community. So we spent some time working to adopt our mission, our vision, and our goals. We also had to do some organization building, which involved developing our committee structure, membership, and objectives, working to create our website, our communication materials, our branding materials, really capturing and then being able to communicate who we are as an organization so that we could convey that to the public, but really make sure that right out of the gate we were unified as an organization. We also had to do a lot of the not-so-exciting work, which is put in place really important organizational systems that would make sure that we were compliant, that we had everything in place to function as an independent 501c3, which meant we had to set up our accounting, our legal, our banking, and all of the policies that go with those. We also spent a fair amount of time working to refine and formalize our endowment model. We all know from prior conversations the intention behind the SB 1090 monies were to set up an endowment, but how we did that required some really careful thought to make sure that we were anticipating all of the scenarios and had the board really comfortable with the policies that were put in place around that endowment, because there are some complicated fiscal management issues that we needed to make sure our board had researched and understood and then developed the policies to ensure that we had a good, a robust endowment. You'll remember from a prior meeting, we worked for many, many months with district leadership to develop a memorandum of understanding to define the partnership between the foundation and the district. We also got to meet with over 100 community stakeholders to really talk through who we are as an organization and identify potential partners and supporters going forward. we developed our inaugural programs that would begin to bring some definition to how we could invest in the district and bring those out to the community to give the community something concrete that they knew what we were, not just what we sought to do in terms of the high-level impact, but really give them something to put their hands around and say, okay, if I invest my dollars in this program, this is the impact that I can expect to see. We selected an investment manager, and at the very end of this year, we received and invested that first installment of SB 1090 monies, which was $4.5 million. So that now is in the market, invested for that endowment. And the number that I love the most is at the end of our first year, separate and aside from the SB 1090 monies, the organization raised over $300,000. I will say a big chunk of this came from our own board. We had a very generous board that had 100% participation in board giving. And because our board gave at that 100% level, they were really effective ambassadors in going out to the community and making the case for why we now want the community to invest. But we're really proud of this number for year one. All right, you'll remember that the investment priorities, these should look somewhat familiar because we kind of ripped them off from your board, but we're working on equity, college and career, innovation, and whole child. And our strategies then take those priorities and try to build something concrete and actionable that reflects those priorities. So in 2019-20, our efforts were focused on these four specific program areas: learning grants, the iInnovate initiative, our opportunity initiative, and we also established the Andrea Blanco Legacy Fund. So looking at our learning grants, this was the first action of our board. And I think that's important because it really reflected the values of our board, that they wanted the first thing that we did as an organization to be to ask our teachers, the staff, our school site stakeholders, where they saw the opportunities for impact. And so we adopted a three-tier grant-making program. The first, you'll recall, was our innovation grants. These were awards up to $10,000 for any school site personnel. So it wasn't just teachers, it was open to staff, and we did receive proposals from administrators and staff as well as teachers. We gave seven of these awards, totaling just over $56,000 for the first round of grant making. The next round of grant making was student grants. These were specifically focused on our high school students, and we asked them for their ideas about what could make their school an even better place to be and learn. We made six awards, totaling just over $5,000, and I'm really excited to get to work with students to help them implement some of these ideas. And on Sunday night, we just closed the application period for our teacher grants. This is our last round of competitive grant making for this academic school year, and this one was done in partnership with the Teach Foundation, which you'll all remember has been doing teacher grants for many, many, many years. And so we've come together and we opened up this opportunity of teacher grants, $1,000 for individuals or $5,000 for teams of teachers. And we have those applications that we're going to be reviewing and making awards hopefully next month. I will say, we've not sat down and looked at these, but our budget would allow for us to make up to $50,000 of teacher grants in this category. All right, so the iInnovate initiative, this is one that we are so excited about. Our board has a really strong interest in preparing students with the skills to compete in a changing global economy, 21st century economy, and for us what that means is rediscovering that which makes us uniquely human, learning to be creative, to collaborate, to problem solve, things that machines cannot do. But in the new economy, what we know is students are going to need to be able to harness and direct technology, to work with their hands, to put systems together, and problem solve. And so for us, this comes under a big umbrella of project-based learning. How do we create integrated hands-on learning opportunities where students can problem solve and collaborate and build and create together? So we were so delighted to receive a $100,000 lead gift from the Harold Miosi Charitable Trust that is now going to the district to launch phase one of the iInnovate initiative, which is a planning phase. So over 6 months, beginning right now in the month of January, we will be bringing together teams of grade level teachers to look at developing model lessons and pilot those lessons in kind of their classrooms, as well as help us understand what are the materials and the resources that would be necessary to bring this type of project-based learning equitably to all 10 of our elementary sites. One of the things that was immediately clear to our board as we began looking at this early on was some of our schools have incredible hands-on learning opportunities. And a lot of those are because they have parents or PTAs that are bringing those resources to the school site. And that's amazing. We want all of these kids to have opportunities to put their hands on incredible project-based learning resources and materials. But we need to make sure that we think about the model for how to engage the community in a really equitable way. So regardless of which school site a kiddo attends, they can have access to the same high-quality learning experience in that project-based learning model. So for us, at the heart of this is whatever we do, we need to do it equitably at all 10 elementary sites. So we're looking at the instructional piece, we're looking at the resource requirements, and then also the professional development, teacher support, and training. What can we do to make sure that this is easy for teachers to embrace and integrate into their instruction? Because some of it could be new and feel different. All right. The Opportunity Initiative is one that we spent a fair amount of time working through as a board. We did not conclude 2019 with a specific adopted investment strategy. What we thought going in was we need to remove the cost barrier for the SAT. We've heard anecdotally that the $79 cost of the SAT is a practical barrier for students pursuing college. So we started there and thought that that was, you know, pretty simple and straightforward, and we can do that. As we began engaging with district leadership, teachers, counselors, of course we discovered it's a lot more complicated than that. And it starts upstream, and we need to be thinking about what are the barriers that students encounter all along their academic journey, maybe even as early as elementary. And so as our board grapples with the complexity of this, we know we can't boil the ocean, so we need to find a high-impact starting point, but we're trying to figure out what is that really savvy model that gives us some flexibility and has a nuanced approach to a very complicated problem. So we're beginning to gravitate toward a few ideas, and my hope is that by the end of the first quarter of this year, we will have an initial investment strategy that we can begin piloting for this opportunity initiative. But we're working very intentionally to not have this be just a foundation board conversation, but to have this be an ongoing dialogue between the board and the district and all the district stakeholders, because our board is just learning a lot through this process. So we're trying to be quick and aggressive about these things, but we also want to make sure that we're really deliberate. All right, the Andrea Blanco Legacy Fund has been honestly just such a blessing for me in this first year to see how beloved our educators are at their school sites and community, and to learn out of a tragedy what special people we have serving in the school and what passion our community has to make sure that the legacy of impact continues. So the really I think beautiful thing that I've learned, I didn't have the personal privilege of knowing Andrea, but hearing the stories that people have shared, there are certain themes that have emerged, which is she was attentive, she was present. She knew students and had relationships with them and could identify these quiet needs that they had, the barriers that they were encountering that were threatening to limit their pursuit of otherwise great opportunities for them. And then she was responsive. She was proactive about meeting those needs and removing those barriers. And she was impactful. The things that she was doing were making a difference in kids' lives. And so as our board has talked through who she was and what her unique engagement was, we're working to manage this legacy fund in a similar way, where we want this to be kind of a discretionary fund that gives our board an opportunity to be nimble, that when somebody at a school site comes to us and says, we see a need to really respond to a challenge that a student has or an opportunity the student has in a way that Andrea would have, that our board is in a position to say yes. So this is not an application-based fund, but it's more of sort of a discretionary fund that allows us to be responsive. All right. Another cool thing that we're doing that was an opportunity that presented itself toward the end of last year was we've partnered with the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce on a talent development series. So as we are looking at how do we prepare our students to compete for the jobs of the future, the obvious question to ask would be to local employers, what are you seeing in the talent pool now? As students are leaving our system, do they possess the skills necessary to succeed in the workplace? And as you, the employer, forecast how your workplace is going to change, what skills are you going to need, and do our students have them? And so with the chamber, we've developed an engagement strategy to ask those questions. It started with a survey that went out to the entire membership of the San Luis Obispo Chamber. And then after we received that data, we sat down and did in-person focus group interviews with 50 local employers and HR directors from across 12 different industry segments to go a little bit deeper and try to understand what their priority needs are and ask them questions such as, if there was one thing that K-12 could do to better prepare students to succeed in the workplace, what would it be? And we're in the process of organizing and going through all of the feedback that we received. It was a tremendous amount of data and a fascinating, fascinating engagement. But this lent itself beautifully to some other collaborations that we were doing with the District Leadership for Career Technical Education that's also working on engaging industry and aligning programs and instruction with industry needs. So we were working on common goals. We collaborated through the process. What we didn't expect was that the outcome of this engagement, this talent development pipeline, would produce an information set that would help the district CTE apply for a grant. So the foundation, the SLO Chamber of Commerce, and the district collaborated on a grant proposal that was submitted at the end of last year for just over $400,000. We have not heard yet whether we've been selected. I was hoping, to make a great announcement, but that'll be next time. But we were able to put in this grant that we think is a really exciting approach to uniting industry and CTE. So we're hopeful that we'll be successful in that. Looking forward to this coming year now, I'll share with you some of our priorities, and these are sort of my North Stars for this year. So the Opportunity Task Force is front and center. As I mentioned, we want to make sure that we finalize our investment strategy with a budget so that we can go out and begin engaging the community to begin contributing to make whatever those recommendations are a reality. The iInnovate, as we go through the first 6 months of this year in the planning phase, hopefully we'll begin getting some definition around what it's going to take for the implementation phase and get a budget for that so that we can also begin working with local donors to invest to make that a reality as well. Our grants, I will say we were delighted with how our grants went in the first year. There were some learnings, and we're working through refinements to improve both engagement as well as what are ways that we can continue to improve and focus our grant making for greater impact. And then, of course, we want to grow our endowment. We will be expecting later this year, I presume, to receive the second installment of SB 1090 funds, which I have as $2.25 million that will be added. And then we're also, as a development committee, looking at community members that may be interested in contributing to grow that endowment as well. So those are my four priorities going into this coming year.
Thank you. Ms. Frame. Evelyn, did you have? Oh, all right. Mr. Buckman.
Just a real quick question.
Yeah.
So the board was recently made aware of a student who had their water turned off. And so
had their what turned off?
Water turned off in their home, and their phone was not working. So when we talk about the Andrea Blanco legacy, is that the type of thing that we're talking about that gives the district? Or what are some, like maybe a concrete example of something that has been used for?
So it has not been used. We had one opportunity that our board had taken a preliminary action to approve, and then the need actually was addressed in another way, and so we pulled back and said, okay, then we'll hold on to the funds. So this year the fund has been growing. There's a little over $2,000 in that fund right now. And so the process is either ideas that come to the board or opportunities that the board identifies. It would simply be a board action to approve that. So I will say the example that you just cited may feel a little bit outside of what the board has envisioned. What they talked about were scholarships or more school-related costs. If there, you know, was a case to be made for a cost that was not explicitly academic, I think our board will have an open mind and would try to view it through the lens of, is this the kind of thing that Andrea would have done? I think that's really going to be a threshold question for us. And we're hoping to administer this fund in consultation with her family and make sure that because it's being done in her name, that they also have opportunities to participate with us in those discussions.
Thank you.
Very cool. Anyone else?
Questions?
Thank you so much for keeping us updated.
Thanks for your support.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you. All right. Next is item 8.04, LCAP engagement update number 3. Ms. McGrath.
Thank you. Happy to give you an update on all of the different stakeholder engagement opportunities we've had around the LCAP, as well as ask for your input on a couple of revisions to your upcoming study sessions. So that's my two goals for today. So first of all, Superintendent's Student Senate, you'll know that we've had additional meetings. The students are diving into the data that they have received from their students, and I know you'll get additional information about that, but that does provide goals for LCAP as well as site-level goals. Common Ground Task Force, as Dr. Prater mentioned, is a group that he continues to meet with and gather input as well. So Mr. Pinkerton and I finished up all of the staff presentations and have the surveys out to all of the different staffs and are waiting for creative ideas. So the survey is out as well. We are implementing the parent and community survey, looking for opportunities to gather input. At January 22nd principal meeting, Mr. Mayfield will be brainstorming with the principals about intentional ways to ensure that we're getting input from a wide variety of parents. So that's one thing they will be brainstorming together. We have our LCAP Advisory Council. Mr. Mayfield's doing a great job of having a really well-rounded group of representatives from every school site. We look for groups, especially from the three student groups that are represented by the LCAP, which are SED, EL, Foster Homeless Youth. And not only did they give us good feedback about survey adjustments, but they will be looking at every single comment and looking for patterns of feedback so that it helps direct what we can do for our upcoming three-year LCAP plan. So as you know, this is our third presentation here. We will continue to give you updates. What I would like to propose is, speaking of kind of the board meeting presentations, is you have a February and a March board study sessions planned, and I know that you preserve some of that time for Measure D. What I would love to propose is the use of just a piece of that to build your understanding as well as gather your input around what we're hearing for LCAP, especially because this is the beginning of a three-year cycle. So with your approval, I would like to propose the partial use of those next study sessions for some LCAP time. So I would like to hear from you on that when I finish up here.
Are you seeking just consensus or a full?
Consensus would be great if that's.
Okay. Do we have that?
Yes. Way higher.
Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I know your light's on.
So that you could see my thumb going up.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Right. We also have parent leader group meetings that we gather input from those as well, and presentations to different employee groups and unions. So a lot of progress. Would love to be able to give you some additional information and hear from you as well on that process. I think Mr. Mayfield, just finishing up around the circle, has a DLAC meeting later this week. It's a time where we get specific information from that group as well.
Thank you. Mr. Unger.
And we'll be using the new LCAP template this year, is that correct?
It actually just came out, I think, day before yesterday. So we will begin to dive in, and yes, we will use that.
Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
With the groups that you've already met with, are you seeing a trend any trends that you'd like to share, or maybe even something exciting, something new?
I would love to.
Something new that's coming forward?
I would love to. What we're hearing is a need for an instructional focus. That is one thing that we're starting to hear a real pattern around. In my world, I always think of CIA, right? Curriculum, instruction, assessment, first, best instruction makes the biggest difference. We've done a lot of work around curriculum, a lot of work around assessment. We're hearing a lot that we need an instructional, additional focus. That's one thing we're hearing. We're hearing more and more still about the need for a multi-tiered system of support, the interventions that we've talked about. Just instructional coaching, right, that we have an incredible staff of people that work incredibly hard, and you always have to keep honing your craft, right, and keep getting feedback, just like the process Ms. Gould talked about, looking for additional strategies and getting feedback around that. We hear still a lot about equity. We hear things about specific programs like AVID. We also hear things around the need for counseling and our social emotional needs for students, as well as co-teaching and inclusion things. So those are probably some of the big rocks and things that we're hearing about, and feedback still coming in. But if I'm looking for patterns as of now, that's what I'm starting to see.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Thank you very much, Ms. Rebecca.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Item 8.05 is the contract with the Hourglass Project and Deloitte Group.
Yes, Board. Thank you. I want to just bring us back to around 2016 when the PG&E announcement came that they were going to close the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant effective 2024, 2025. And with that, we knew as San Luis Coastal that meant $8 to $10 million of lost revenue. With that, as you well know, I put together a blue ribbon committee of community-wide leaders and asked for their feedback and their suggestions, recommendations. They put together a blue ribbon report and presented that in 2017. And in that report, it clearly articulated the nature of our district losing that type of revenue and that we needed, and they encouraged us to act swiftly. What we did, as you do recall, I'm sure, we quickly eliminated $3 million from our general fund by squeezing our district staff, and also at the time we were no longer able to continue our coaching model. And with that, that $3 million reduction would allow us over time to save and squeeze that and minimize the impact of that loss. Within the time frame of that Blue Ribbon Committee report, we also were fortunate enough to realize the SB 1090 revenue, which was enacted in order for the district to transition from that loss so that it wasn't a cliff, it was just a longer path. Nevertheless, it's going to happen. In fact, this year's first interim, you saw that. PG&E took away $2 million of the revenue we normally would have received as a depreciation stage for the closure of the plant. So my awareness has grown more acute, and with that, I refer back to the Blue Ribbon Committee report where they said, take a look at those surplus properties in your district that you are no longer using as school sites and examine ways in which you could develop or reuse those properties in order to generate future revenue. This is what I have before you tonight. After lots of discussion and lots of board study sessions of what we could do and what it could look like, I was able to meet with the Hourglass Project leads, which has a broader vision, a much broader regional mission to remedy the loss of economic, the impact of the Diablo Canyon closure, and try to stimulate regional interest and bring businesses to this area. And coupled with that, I was able to also meet the Deloitte Group, which is a consulting group that has come together under a master services agreement with the Hourglass Project. And so I asked them to sit with me and talk to me about how they could help us, provide us with technical and expert information about the Morro Elementary property. I knew the city of Morro Bay is interested because we've met with them and they have expressed that interest. And but the distance between expressing interest and actually doing something with that property is a long way. And the Deloitte Group, along with the Hourglass Project, they have the expertise. And so during the December 12th board study session, they came and presented this proposal as a discussion item. And you were able to ask them questions, and you asked me a series of questions as well. My suggestion and my recommendation to the board is that we move forward in two phases. And that's why the proposal is written in two phases. I realize this action item isn't written, broken into those two phases, which you could augment this evening if you'd like. But phase one would provide the board with the demographic and market analysis of the property and really define what they see as best and highest use of that property. This is very technical and expert type of information. And if the board were to like that information that they would receive, then phase two would come into play, and that would be in analyzing different ways in which you could fund such a project and really provide the board with options on ways in which you could do that. You may decide you don't want to do this, but you may also decide there are some ways in which you can move forward. And as well as project, what they're calling project procurement strategy, and that is that's a fancy way to say, here are the ways in which you could develop that property specifically, and it gives the board some criteria, some options, some warnings. But this phase one and phase two, in my assessment, would be the quality of information would be what you would need in order to make a high quality strategic decision for Morro Elementary. And I believe in our district we have properties that are untapped in terms of their potential. It's a very nasty business if we go the wrong direction. And I just want to make sure the board has a really good system in place of gathering this information so that you can make the best kinds of decisions. So what you have here is a recommendation, a proposal from the Hourglass Deloitte Group for a grand total of about $100,000 to give you this information over the next few months. And the way I look at it, if I were to backward map this, is this would at least get us started in understanding what's at stake if we were to pursue developing this property. And maybe best and highest use is workforce housing. Maybe it's a combination of other things. I'm not sure. But they're going to provide this information to you and give you a pathway forward that is far more detailed and far more informed than I could give you on my own or with our staff. And so this is what I have in front of you. I do believe it's an intelligent, wise move to go in this direction and see if this is what if this will meet your needs in order to make the best use of Morro L and to start generating a future revenue stream that we will desperately need in less than a decade. So this is what I have before you.
I have a question, and then I'll go to Mr. Unger. So who are the signatories on this agreement? Is it San Luis Coastal and the Deloitte Group, or is it San Luis Coastal and the Hourglass Project, or some other combination?
Yeah, that's a great question. I did ask that question. And so the Hourglass Project has the Deloitte Group, which is a internationally known consultant firm. Very expensive. But they signed a master services agreement with the Hourglass Project for their efforts, which are being funded by multiple chambers and local businesses. And so the Hourglass Group has a master services agreement with Deloitte. So the signatory on this would be San Luis Coastal and Hourglass in partnership with Deloitte. Deloitte has been able, we negotiated down their cost because of the Hourglass Project Group. And so that's why it's as laid out here, $49,500 per phase. That would be a much, much higher number if Deloitte were working in just with us in isolation of the Hourglass.
Will we be working directly with Deloitte, or will we be working through the Hourglass Project?
Both. You'll be working directly with Deloitte and the Hourglass Group. And the Hourglass Group is simply that's your local context. So that's those are your people that understand the local politics, the local terrain. But the Deloitte Group is answering those technical questions that we need. So it's both.
So I just want to be clear that our needs as a district, or our desires, what we're looking for, I believe perhaps will benefit the Hourglass Group, but that I'm hoping that they will, whoever we're dealing with, will recognize that what we're looking at is generating revenue for our district, not for them, or, you know, if they're a beneficiary somehow of something, but that I guess the bottom line is, what are they hoping to get out of this?
Their mission is to help local entities like us. That's their mission, to help local entities like us create interest for business entities from outside, or for the workforce to be able to live in the communities where they work, and therefore become a place where it attracts other businesses to come to this region. That's their broader mission. I've discovered that their broader mission is not inconsistent with our interests as a district to generate revenue. So in other words, if we can align their interests with technical information that Deloitte will give us, then we win, because we get what we need, which is a real specific strategy to move forward with these properties, or this property in particular. And the Hourglass Project achieves their mission's goals on a smaller level, but then they can apply it at a bigger level when they start working with other cities and other municipalities. Our district is unique because we operate within two cities and a county.
Right.
So we are a regional district. And so with that, it's a sort of a microcosm, and it's the first salvo for the Hourglass Project that I'm aware of. I think they have other things in the works, but what it is that they're after is to help us find success, because our success will lead to their success. And that's what I'm after. They have skin in the game. They know what we need. I know what we need. And they're going to help us get there. And that's what I believe is in front of you tonight.
And then one more question. Sorry, Chris. If the board approves this agreement, mm-hmm. and then as we pursue our ends, what we're looking for, will whoever is working on this on our behalf, if it's you or Mr. Pinkerton or whoever is doing that,
will they be speaking directly with a representative from Deloitte or from the Hourglass Project?
Yeah, so two things. Directly with Deloitte for this technical phased-in information. That's a very technical skill that Deloitte has. That's why Deloitte's there. Okay? The Hourglass Group, they're very skilled in knowing the machinations of the politics that get in the way of these things. So they're the ones that are interfacing with cities and municipalities to help us kind of help us get through the maze that will exist and will be confronted by us when we get through this, however we do this. And so our staff will work directly with Deloitte, specific to the phase of the technical information, and we'll be working also with side by side with the Hourglass when we are having to navigate city and county regulations and state types of regulations that might hinder our ability to maximize our revenue. Okay, so there are two parts.
Pardon me? I don't know, you should ask. Okay, Mr. Unger.
I'm in support of this. I think what you were trying to say, Dr. Prater, is that this is really about economic development. And a strong economy and strong economic development in our area is certainly good for the school district as well as the communities that we serve and the kids that we serve and the parents of the kids that we serve. I think, obviously, the Blue Ribbon Committee was very forceful in their recommendation for the use of surplus properties, and we know that... although we're getting rent from our surplus properties, we know that there's going to be costs accruing in order to keep them in the kind of condition that they need to be in, and that will be a drain on our general fund. I think this is also important as a representative of the coast and someone who has spoken to people in Morro Bay. I think this is clearly important for Morro Bay. I'm not working for Morro Bay, but I think, again, a healthy Morro Bay and collaborations with Morro Bay will benefit the school district. I don't think we have the expertise to be able to know the things that you're talking about. I don't think that we I don't see that once we get this going, assuming we do get it going, there are going to be a lot of people out there who are going to want our property, and there are going to be people out there who are going to try to take advantage of us with this property and how we develop it. Plus, there are going to be the interests of the city of Morro Bay and the community in Morro Bay. As I pointed out before, the athletic field at Morro Elementary School is used pretty extensively by the community. So I think those are all things that we're going to have to take into consideration. And so those are the reasons I'm going to support this.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I am a little confused because I thought that we were contracting only with the Deloitte Group. So this is a little different than my understanding had been. And so I'm wondering, is the Hourglass Project performing all of their work gratis?
Yeah. Yeah. This is really a pass-through because of the Master Services Agreement. This is really the phase assignments here, phase one and phase two, are really very technical objectives, which Deloitte will do. And so Hourglass is simply working with us and passing through the cost savings. But we shouldn't underestimate what they will help us do. There are a lot of alligators in the grass, no pun intended, out in Morro L. But there are people out there in the community that will object potentially to whatever we decide to do. And this could be a nice coalition of people that are helping us move in the right direction. And so it's not unlike what I previously shared with you. In fact, the attachment there is identical to what we presented during December 12th, during the study session. What's unique is I did not emphasize the Master Services Agreement and the pass-through that Deloitte will be acting within. So it is a partnership. It is a coalition of sorts, but the primary work will be done by Deloitte. And the Hourglass will not have economic, we're not paying the Hourglass group money. We're paying the Deloitte group for their reports, for their information.
Okay, so this Deloitte has submitted a proposal, a phased proposal. Phase one, phase two. Each with a value of $49,500. I do believe that those are very reasonable costs for the work that they propose to do. For my part, I would advocate maintaining the phased element of that and having you come back to us at the end of phase one with the information that is generated during phase one and ask us if we have continuing interest in funding phase two.
Excellent. And I did share that with them when I spoke with them, and that's part of what we discussed even at the board study session. So that's consistent.
My opinion is that I want to see the benefit.
Okay.
I want to see the benefit from phase one before committing to phase two.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Potman.
Yeah, I would, after the study session that we have, after the discussion I've heard tonight, I would certainly support Marilyn's concept. Okay.
Ms. Prang.
I would concur with Ms. Rogers about the doing the phase. It would give us an opportunity to see how the type of information we're getting, how well we're working. One of the things, just a concern about, staff is already they're doing a lot of things. So a little bit of concern about, if Mr. Ryan is, working with Deloitte and then Hourglass, and it gets, more complicated. And so this would be an opportunity for us to, see what we're getting and also how that process is working for at the same time. So.
Mr. Millar.
Well, initially, I didn't realize this was specific to Morrow L. And I'm still trying to figure out what Hourglass has to do with this and why making it a regional thing makes it easier, more direct for us. The Morrow L property, we already know, has got a lot of interest. And yes, I do agree with you that there are people that might try to take advantage of us, but we would use professional assistance in this. So I was prepared to vote against it because I didn't understand what Hourglass is involved in, why it's involved. I'm still not sure, but I can support the approving phase one and see what information Deloitte develops. I'm aware of Deloitte. I haven't done this kind of thing with Deloitte before, but I'd like to see what the deliverables are before we move on to the second phase.
Mr. Unger.
I'd like to make a motion to approve a contract with Hourglass and Deloitte to complete phase one.
I'll second that, please.
Okay. In terms of further discussion, I have another comment to make, and that is just I think this is, for me, was speaking just for myself, not for the board, similar to this raises an experience I had as we got into Measure D, that I don't know what I don't know. And I think that working with an organization such as Deloitte that is more, this is what they do, this is the kind of thing they do, will provide an opportunity for me to learn what I need to know, to become better educated in this. And this is could prove, depending upon how we choose to move forward with it, could prove to be quite an undertaking that would be interesting and exciting, similar to Measure D, but that it will be very important that we do it with as much knowledge and forethought and care as possible on behalf of our
respective communities, the communities at large, which will include San Luis as well as Morro Bay and Los Osos, and the impact we, the positive impact we could have on those communities. So let's just, that's where I stand on it. So we have, is there, we have a motion and a, by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Bruckman. Do you have?
I don't think this is working. So.
No, it's working.
Oh, it is?
Working.
Okay. Yeah. I did have, as we, and you all have to correct me, you know, if we approve phase one, how would, I mean, we have Mr. Holcomb here, and he's, would he be helpful in using to guiding it, or, I don't know.
Mr. Holcomb is our advisor for Measure D.
Oh,
not
okay.
For other projects, is my understanding. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yes, but I certainly would. We've all grown to trust Mr. Holcomb and his and his insights. So he will certainly, if he's willing, help us as we move down in phase one and just give some feedback as we move along. But that's not his primary responsibility. Who'd be ad hoc? Or what is that? Pro bono. Pro bono. That's it. That's what I wanted to say.
Should he choose to work pro bono.
Yes.
There is a provision in my original contract for other projects okay. as assigned.
That's
there
right.
Okay.
That's right.
Boy, we did a good job on that. All right. Is there any further discussion? Then I'd like to reiterate the motion just to make sure I'm clear that at this time we have a motion to approve phase one, the project kickoff, demographic and market analysis, and highest and best use analysis in the amount of $49,500.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And I assume that that motion also includes that we will relook at phase
yes.
two.
Oh, yes.
As a part, a complement to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Once that's done. Thanks.
Correct. Thank you. All right. Next is 8.06, Measure D, Amendment Number 3.
Yes, we have two projects that we're bringing amendments to GMPs tonight for the board, both at San Luis Obispo High School. In particular, the first one is due to cost overruns at the Student Support Center building. When we started this project, two things kind of coincide to the reason why I'm asking the board for more money for this particular project. So the first one was when we set up the initial student services building project, we realized right off the get-go that when we were doing the infrastructure work for that project, that we needed to go ahead and start some of the pool infrastructure, so water line, sewer line, gas lines, to tie into that project as well while we were doing the setup for the student services project. So by taking some of that extra GMP on and some of that extra work on, it basically, those costs went to the student support services building when we should have actually had that as part of a pool GMP later. But really the key thing that we've run into in terms of the reason why we've spent our contingency funds thus far is because of the soil conditions at that site. So just kind of a history lesson for the board in terms of what we found at San Luis Obispo High School. You know, that site is kind of, it's on a hill, and you used to basically go down from the, you know, the mound itself down to Johnson Avenue. And so when they built the new gymnasium there back in, remember the date? 79, I believe. So when they built the gymnasium and they kind of changed the entrance to the school and those things, they took fill from the area and kind of filled in the whole side of the gym, which was the old baseball, where the baseball field was, all the way out, which is where the new current pool is going, all the way out to the front of the campus, which was the old parking lot turnaround where the eucalyptus tree was. Right, so all of that was kind of fill. Well, even with our Earth, even with our systems and our geological testing of those sites, as they've gone on to then build the pool and build the student services building, what they found is that there's been a lot of soil issues. And so that's something that, again, there's really three reasons why you have additional cost to a project after it's been bid, right? And that's there's unforeseen conditions that come up. There's architect misses, not in the plans. And so you still have to pay for those, right? You don't pay the architect when they miss something, but you still have to fix it. And then there's adds. So when the district wants to add something to a project. In this case, really a lot of the cost, and the reason why I'm bringing this forward is really unforeseen conditions that happened with the student services building. So when you go to build a building on ground, you have to have a much different soil impact than if you're going to build a grass field or a baseball diamond or put a parking lot asphalt on top of it. So the costs that you'll see here today are really the soil conditions. Getting rid of that soil is very expensive, right? And so, you know, maintaining new soil there and kind of fixing that. So when we really waited to the last minute, the project's almost complete, but there are some items that are still kind of out there. In particular, one right now, they're putting the new retaining wall along the track in the new student services building, which is going to have the main entrance walkway onto campus. There's been a lot of soil issues, as well as having to expand the base of that wall so that it meets the DSA regulations and you know, kind of what they're asking us to do. So tonight we're asking the board to approve an increase of $450,000. Thanks to Mr. Buckman, he actually caught an error. We had $550,000 in the GMP on the board amendment. We changed that to reflect the real cost of $450,000 that we put forward. And so that's the first amendment tonight, is to add $450,000 to the GMP for the Student Support Services Building, so that, and we feel that that is enough to take care of any you know, foreseen conditions and even unforeseen conditions right now that that we feel like we're going to have to deal with over the next month and a half as we complete that project.
Any board discussion or questions? This is an action item. Mr. Unger?
You can go to the public.
Oh, yeah. Look at everybody. Mr. Bonin is a member of the public. Would you like to comment on that?
I'll be.
Okay. Mr. Buckman?
If there's no discussion, I'd be happy to make a motion to approve this.
I don't really have a lot of discussion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I had the opportunity to sit down with Mr. Pinkerton and several others and ask a lot of questions about both of the Measure D items that are on the agenda tonight, and I feel well satisfied that my questions were answered, and I understand the necessity for these additive changes. I don't like them, but I know that they're just part of what's to be expected any time you do a construction project. So I'm comfortable with this.
Would you like to second the motion?
And I will second the motion.
You have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We will note that there are now five of us here. Thank you.
So the second amendment is when we initially had the pool, GMP come to the board, we had part of that was also fields, right? So after the pool is done, they're going to go and finish the fields project. There's going to be an additional softball field there, so the girls will have two softball fields at the bottom portion. The boys' baseball fields will be up at Taylor Field. So the girls are going to get a much nicer, closer to the campus facility, which will be great. But when we first got those initial bids and looked at the plans, we were, you know, I wanted to revisit the cost of those projects and go back and meet with the architects and, like, really, is this how much it needs to cost? Can we scale it down? Is there anything we can do to save money on the fields portion itself? So we did not bring that fields portion to the board. We just brought the pool portion, knowing that at some later day we would have to come back and ask the board for the rest of the field GMP to complete that project. So the pool is nearing completion as well. So we're looking at beginning of March in terms of the pool. And so as they finish the pool, they're going to be moving off of the entire middle of that campus, which will mean getting rid of the current lay-down yard, parking, you know, work area for Acme. It's going to be super helpful for that school site, right, in terms of students and transition and getting around. Again, sat down with 19-6, formerly PMSM, looked at all the plans, and tried to do whatever we could. There wasn't really much in terms of savings that we found, other than maybe going to some pre-manufactured backstops, some fencing, those types of things, scaling that part of it down. But overall, replanting the grass, new irrigation throughout the area, new ADA sidewalks that go from the pool to the tennis courts behind the softball is all reflected in the GMP that we're bringing to the board tonight. So this is a $1.4 million increase for the cost associated with the new softball, the new fields, the new ADA access around. And so we are, this GMP is more of an allowance GMP. So these are kind of the expectation based on the former bids that we had received from Acme. We've asked them to go back out and see if we can get better bids, get more bidders at this point, to see if we can bring that number down. So we'll see how that goes in terms of the bids that they receive in the next coming months. But we are asking the board to move ahead, as this is going to be something that is going to happen this spring. So we're very close to needing to get rid of the current laydown yard and kind of move them off that central part of campus.
Any discussion? Mrs. Roger?
Well, I still think that the laydown yard was always their responsibility to remove on their dime, but apparently they disagree. If there are no additional questions, then I'll move approval of item 8.07.
We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right.
So what I will share with the board, too, at the next Measure D study session is an update on our budgets. I will share the $1.4 million that Mr. Bonham will help us save. At the Student Services Building in terms of the GMP savings from allowances and contingency funds there. So we often don't talk about the good things that happen, right, with Measure D, although we do celebrate when we open grant new buildings and we move forward. So, but I will update the board on some of those savings as well that we've been able to have based on our staff's great work. So thank you.
That's important. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bonin. All right, next, 8.08, approve board member pay for permissible absence.
I'll approve.
I'll let's have our. Dr. Prater, would you like to present on our board member approval for permissible absence?
My apologies, I got sidetracked. Yes, on December 17th, Mrs. Roger, she previously mentioned, has been through quite a lot. And she was very ill on the night of that board meeting, and I'm requesting that the board accept her her illness as an acceptable absence for that meeting.
I believe Ms. Frame would like to make a motion on that.
Make a motion to approve board member pay for permissible absence.
And knowing that we then stuck her with various positions, I will second that. While she was in her hospital bed, I will second that. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Hi.
Board policy.
Hi. Great. So we have board policy 415142
And for 351, all in personnel employee compensation. So this did go through our typical process. Ms. Newland would have checked this out first, met with me, and then your subcommittee looked at it as well. You can see the adjustments there. Red would have been legal suggestions from Gamut, as well as subcommittee adjustments that are crossed off and suggested moving to NAR. So this is first reading. Our typical pattern would be for you to suggest any adjustments and then to bring it back for second reading next time.
Thank you. Mr. Unger.
So I noticed some phraseology that I was curious about. I believe it says, certificated employees shall not be placed in different classifications on the schedule nor paid different salaries solely on the basis of grade levels at which they teach. My question is, how does this square with the need to find highly qualified teachers and hard-to-fill positions like special education?
Mm-hmm. I think those would be considered on a separate salary schedule when needed. So that would be a negotiated item. And, for example, speech-language pathologists would be an example where it would be considered a separate salary schedule, and therefore it would help meet the need, yet also fit within this language.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? So this is a first reading. We will bring it back for a second reading, or it will be on the consent agenda at our next meeting. All right, 8.10.
Thank you. Have one more board policy, 5117, and I have this in front of you. We have the red items that were Gamut suggestions, as well as blue from director, as well as purple from the board subcommittee. I have had some input since it was posted, and so wanted to bring that to your attention as well. On the transportation section, Mr. Unger noticed that perhaps the first sentence might be well kept to say the district shall not provide transportation beyond any school attendance area. The subcommittee's suggestion was that that information in that entire paragraph might be better suited for the AR because that information changes and it's quite detailed. So, you know, either way suits me. So I know there's a couple of ways. I'd probably like your direction in that, in the adjustments as a whole, but then probably also in the transportation paragraph. I don't know, Mr. Buckman, if you wanted to add any information. I see your light.
Just as I monitor Ed Code, there's been a lot to do with transportation of homeless, foster. There's a designation of a student that's been bullied at a school. So there's been some stuff around that. So I would continue the recommendation of the committee to move this into the AR where it can be handled quickly and not keep coming back to the board year after year.
Mr. Unger.
Well, there are two things actually that I'd like to talk about regarding this board policy. I understand what you're saying, Mark, but I am uncomfortable with any suggestion that other than in cases provided by Ed Code, the things you're talking about, that we would provide transportation beyond the school attendance area. I'm very uncomfortable with that for inter-district transfers.
From my
experiences, especially in, you know, we're talking about special education, which is different than this, of course. But I would hate to be responsible for transportation, say for an inter-district child from Paso Robles, for example. I don't even want to open that door. So that's my concern about that. The second thing, and it feels a little clunky to me. It's in the second paragraph where we say, for each approved interdistrict transfer, the district shall enter into an agreement with other involved school districts as authorized by law. The recommendation is we take out the Ed Code section and then go to parents, guardians requesting interdistrict attendance for their students shall be informed of this requirement and apprised of the fact that district might not be reviewed and may not be reviewed in future years. It's just those two sentences don't, the second sentence just doesn't seem to follow the first sentence very well. So I would just ask for maybe some clarification on that.
Mm-hmm. I think the goal of
First of all, there's the strange pattern that sometimes the ed code is embedded within the paragraph and then usually it's at the end. So we're one effort is just to have consistency of removing it from an embedded reference. But then the goal is to show that that the district can enter into this agreement with another school district, but that also trying to not give the impression that it is then should somehow be assumed that future years would then be approved. So
language in that second sentence just doesn't feel right to me, mm-hmm. given how it's supposed to be connected to the first sentence, and that's mm-hmm. the implication. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like your second request was basically some wordsmithing.
Yes.
But the transportation piece, that paragraph, the deletion of that, I think requires some more board discussion, it seems. So I don't know what the wishes of the board are.
I would suggest that there's two options. One would be to eliminate the transportation section as a whole, or to keep the first sentence only, the district shall not provide transportation beyond any school attendance area, but then remove the rest and save details and fast changes, as Mr. Buckman suggested, to the AR.
Mr. Buckman.
Two ways to handle it there.
Yeah, just a thought. So if we were to leave, the district shall not provide transportation beyond any school district attendance area, that would not work with code right now, especially in special ed, because special ed is specifically called out that you do have to transport beyond. So if we left that in there, at a minimum, I know we're not in compliance with what I don't think we're in compliance with that, the special ed part of it. The district is being required by code to more and more, well, not more and more, in extreme cases, provide the transportation. So I don't think we can leave that in there. Unless we were to add a sentence that said, add to it, the district shall not provide transportation beyond any school district attendance area unless required to by code.
Yeah, and I would be satisfied with that.
Okay.
That makes sense to me.
Okay, then I'm fine with leaving it here. It still gives us the flexibility in our AR.
So I would suggest having that sentence with the additional phrase "unless required to by ed code," and then perhaps
well,
I could
say by law because it
by
may
law.
Be a code different than ed code.
Okay, and then could I suggest that we kind of wordsmith that paragraph with the subcommittee and bring back the suggested paragraph at the next reading?
Yep.
Okay. Great. We'll work on those two changes and bring it back next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We meet anyway. I mean, it would just be at our next regular meeting.
We might even could do that by email, just one paragraph.
Yeah, so I would appreciate the caveat that if the subcommittee doesn't meet before the next regular board meeting, that it come back
later.
After that, so we don't have to. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, next is the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. 9.01, approval of field study trip requests. 9.02, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.03, approval of warrants and payroll. 9.04, approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases. 9.05, approval of furniture and equipment request. 9.06, proposed revisions to board bylaw 9324, minutes and recordings. This would constitute the second reading.
I move approval of items 9.01 to 9.06.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Then next is 10.02 to know if there are any advance agenda items. I see your light. Mr. Unger, who's very eager to tell us what it is.
Yes, I appreciate the students coming forward to us tonight, discussing the notion of a comprehensive sustainability plan for the district. I would like to explore that further, and I would like to see that as an agenda item so that we can understand what that could look like, what our options might be, things like that. So I would ask for that to be placed on an agenda, or to get approval for the district from the board to have the discussion to place it on an agenda at the next meeting.
I would second that. It's a concept that I was hoping I explained earlier in the year, but I think it's great that we're going to do it. I think we need to look more closely at what's going on.
So my only question is, you're saying at our next meeting, can we please look at the...
Oh, clearly not at our next meeting.
Yeah,
you know,
okay,
my next meeting would be if we needed to have a discussion about whether to place it on the agenda itself.
So then I would suggest that perhaps next PLRC, we'll kind of look at our upcoming meetings, and if that's something that looks like it fits in to figure out what
it's like.
Okay,
thank you.
Anything else? Next is reports by board members. Mr. Unger.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to thank Leslie O'Connor for hosting me at San Luis Obispo High School this last week. It was really great to be there, and it was great to have a chance to really talk to him about what's going on the campus. They have a lot of work there. They're working hard on it, and they're doing some impressive stuff there. And I just wanted to let you know that I will not be here at the next meeting. I will be in Washington, D.C. attending the National School Board Association, actually kind of CSBA, Advocacy and Equity Institute, where we'll be meeting with our local legislators and discussing issues important to education, probably including fully funding special education, which is, of course, something that's near and dear to my heart.
Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you, everyone. We will see you at our next meeting. Thanks very much. Well, thank you.
Patricia, I aggressed. And then you've got some.